Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. When all is falling apart around you, when people are looking to you for answers you don't have, when you need a calm, reassuring voice to settle your fragile nerves, well, you've come to the right place. The always serene and tranquil, reasoned and measured, stable and sedate Jean Drenig, producer of the Action Radio Citizen Legislature, takes a few minutes each week at this time to reflect on her favorite phrase, "Are you kidding me?" And now, Jean Drenig.
Good morning. I'm not sure what happened, but I was on my computer and then there was no sound, so I'm going to be talking on my phone for a little while. How are you doing today? I'm not sure if you can hear me or not because I cannot hear anything but myself talking. And so I'm just going to talk for a few minutes and see what happens. One thing that is on my mind today, actually there's a few things, but I just want to say one thing with the Kyle Rittenhouse case, and that is, if the Attorney General gets involved and the Department of Justice, I think we have some major, I mean, we already have major issues on our hands in this country, but major issues for the fact that why would they do that? That just tells us that our judicial system is not right, because that means what they're telling us is that, okay, someone can go to trial, be acquitted, or maybe be charged with something, and then if the Justice Department doesn't like the results, then they're going to change it by coming up with their own, whatever they're going to do, charge them with something else or whatever hits their fancy. I don't know. But if this does happen, we all need to take a stand, because this could happen to one of our loved ones. You don't know the crazy stuff that's going to be going on in this world. And I think it's going to just get kind of, may get a little crazier. And so I just want to tell people to be observant, be cautious, do the right thing. Regardless, do the right thing and always be truthful, regardless of how much it hurts, because sometimes the truth does hurt. I mean, I'm sure even when the one guy got on the witness stand and said, you know, Kyle didn't shoot until he pointed his gun, that was the truth. Now he's backtracking, but that was the truth back then, or so he thought it was the truth. And so whatever it is, please, we got to work on one, honesty, integrity, and doing the right thing. Hold on. Greg, I'm not sure what's going on, Greg, because I can't hear anything on my end. Good morning.
Hello, everyone. It's that time of year again. So here is just a friendly little message from your Action Radio revolutionaries. In preparation for Christmas and New Year's, we have just a few ideas and suggestions to make your holiday complete. Granted, these are times of adversity brought about by bureaucrats in what we affectionately call the leftist lockdown orgasmic power trip. But don't let a completely illegal, martial law style, abdication and removal of your constitutional rights get in the way of a decent glass of eggnog with friends. After all, 6-foot social distancing is a completely false concept for a virus that can linger in the air for hours in aerosol form, can be sneezed well over 200 feet, can travel through an entire 10-story building's central air system in a couple of minutes, and goes through a mask like a mosquito through a chain-link fence. So, no matter what you do, everyone is getting exposed sometime. Leaving the healthy people alone accomplishes this in about 10 weeks. So, this should have been done the end of May. Speaking of masks, besides being a violation of your Fourth Amendment rights against seizure of your person, in this case, your face, without due process, the state can't make you wear a mask. So, go home if you're sick, but if not, go free face, as all real Americans are doing, and enjoy the Christmas season. Apparently, there is the deplorable lack of New Year's resolutions this year. Well, I have one. To resist. Yeah, that's right. I'm going to restore and rejuvenate that inner rugged individual the left has tried so hard to put behind a mask and lockdown, and I'm going to resist. So, you find a creative way to resist, there's your revolution resolution. Remember, folks, those Twilight Zone episodes where people wore masks? They were supposed to make you think, not make you copy them. Family values should be emphasized this Christmas with the traditions that bind us together. Sit as close as you can at dinner. Remember those wet kisses from Grandma when you were a kid? Engage in spirited debates. Don't forget to use serving dishes where everyone sticks their own personal fork and spoon in, all in the interest of sharing. Remind everyone that closing churches violates the First Amendment. Closing businesses without criminal convictions violates our Fifth Amendment right to life, liberty, and property. And closing schools denies our kids their right to an education. So, you may want to point that out to your governors and mayors this festive season so they understand their transgressions and can repent. I would have suggested you go to New York this year, but quite frankly, they don't have the balls to celebrate New Year's. No, really, the ball isn't dropping. Maybe we should rename Times Square Tiananmen Square West. Remember that there are many great gifts you can share this Christmas, particularly AR-15s and AK-47s. Those tend to warm the heart. As we say at Action Radio, world peace through strength. Just remember that everything the government tells you is wrong. So if you want to avoid COVID, don't take the vaccine. Go to the beach instead. Get that sunshine and vitamin D. Stay away from home. Engage in commerce and business. Travel as much as you can. Work out at crowded gyms. Drive extensively, preferably with the windows open. Patronize businesses that are in open rebellion. And resist, resist, resist the doctor dictatorship. In closing, let me just say Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and Happy Hanukkah. Muslims, you don't have a holiday at this time, so just go eat Chinese food on Christmas Eve and meet some really nice Jewish folks. Hey, they might be your neighbors. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio.
Good morning.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, it's Shelby.
Yeah, hi, Shelby. I don't know if Greg can hear us because I'm not hearing Greg. So I'm not sure what's going on today. So what is up with you? It's been a while since we talked to you, so I'm glad you're back.
I can't recognize your voice.
This is Jean.
Oh, Jean, yes, of course. Gosh, your voice sounds different to me. I've been a few weeks. I've been traveling, and then there were some things that came up. But everything is, I guess, getting better. You know, we just launched a few trips, and I worked so hard on marketing, but we got some bookings yesterday, so that was really exciting, you know, to finally have something that's working, because travel, you know, has just been so deleted from everybody's lifestyle. But so that was encouraging, but it's still just, it's a lot, Jean. Like, it's been a really tough couple years. Like, I mean, it's just emotionally, financially, it's just hard.
Yeah, I think that's what a lot of people are going through. But the sad thing is with travel, you know, people and some people may say, well, we don't have the finances to travel now. And I really get that too. But I think my gosh, people really do need to get away, you know, even if it's a short excursion. But I think with just, I think just for positive or mental well-being and everything. And so hopefully people will start traveling again. Yeah. Now, how are the cruises? Are more people going on cruises?
Yeah, I mean, it's really divided because, you know, they are totally mandating the vaccine. And, you know, it's like, I don't know, it's just not the way I would expect it. I thought more people would not want them to mandate vaccines, but really the majority want it. And then you have, like, the people that would normally cruise that will never cruise until they, you know, stop mandating it. So just, it's a very broken, like, no one's on the same page, you know. Ships are sailing about 50 to 80% full. They seem to be fine. I mean, they're doing basically testing before you get on board, plus the vaccine. A lot of it's a show, you know. It's like, for instance, the last cruise, they didn't test us on our way out, which I thought was interesting. Because I'm like, well, if you're so worried, like, we just got off at a couple ports and walked around, but you don't care if we have it when we leave the ship. You know what I mean? Like, I hate things for show. Like, it's showy things to me are so useless.
Hey, guys.
Hi.
I'm here. I'm on my cell phone right now. I don't know what's happening. I turned on the station the way I always do, logged in, set it up, it connected live, and everything seems to be fine, except for the fact that nobody can hear me. I mean, the microphone's connected. I've checked all the connections. Everything's doing great. Jean, first of all, thank you for jumping right in and taking over. And Shelby, if you want to stick around, that's fine. If you want to come back in a while, that's fine, too.
Yeah, you're good, though? I mean, you're good. I can't help.
I don't know what's going on. I'm going to stay on my cell phone and try and figure out what's what. There's nothing really to figure out because I've done everything I can normally do. I'm just going to I'll just do the show on my cell phone. The studio's still working. I still got all the buttons in control here. But, yeah, like I say, if you want to come back in about 45 minutes or so, that'd be great, too. So it's up to you.
You know how it goes? Everybody always says the same thing, just reboot. Turn it off again, turn it on again. That's the IT Tech 101. Just turn it on, turn it off.
Okay,
anyway,
if I do that, will it still be there? That's the only question. So that's why you usually don't do that.
Yeah, I know. It's tough. All right, well, I'll call back in about 45 minutes or so. I'll get ready.
Okay. Thanks, Shelby.
Right. Okay. Bye-bye.
All right.
Bye.
Jean, do you want me to try that just for the fun of it? And just are you on the computer screen, right?
I am, yes.
All right, let's try. I'm going to hang up, let you take over, try and reboot, as they say, and let's see if the microphone works this time. And if not, I'll just call back in.
Okay. All right. I wonder if you reboot, is that going to cancel the program?
Well, if it does, I'll just go live and see if it works that time.
Okay.
Adventures in radio.
Yes, we may be in for a wild ride this morning, everybody, and that's okay.
Like I said, Shelby, we got 45 minutes to play before Shelby gets here, so let me give it a shot. Let me hang up now, and let's see what happens.
All right. Well,
we'll be back, everybody.
Yes, and while you hang up, over the weekend was so interesting. I got information from two people, and I was having, how would you say? It just took me by surprise, which it shouldn't have, but it did. And the first one was someone I've known for quite a few years is pregnant, and she works at a hospital or for a hospital. And she was given the medical exemption for the vax. And once you know it, now they have told her they're reneging on the medical exemption, and she needs to get it. And if she does not get the medical exemption by January 1st, she will be out of a job. And I was just wondering, for anybody out there, how many of you, or has this happened to you? I just think this is so crazy. It's like, why give someone a medical exemption if you're going to take it away? And I get that it's a work in progress. Nobody knows from one day to the next what's the next thing that's going to be dropped from the federal government. But in this case, was it something that the federal government did to make this hospital organization renege on their medical exemptions? I don't know, but I'm just curious to know how many of you out there have been experiencing this or experienced this. Me, I have a couple more weeks before I have to put in my first medical exemption. And what I've been told so far, knock on wood, is that the company has been honoring most of them, not all of them, but it really has to do with how you write up the medical exemption. And for those of you that haven't done it that need to, just remember, more is not always better. Sometimes answering the questions very short and simply is all you have to do. Also for that, there is some questions, and I've got the form here, but I've not even looked at it yet. And there are some questions on there that we are told are, however you answer them, you have to be careful how you answer them for the fact that they may trip you up. And so why I'm saying that is if you haven't filled out a medical exemption form and you still have to, there are people out there that can help you with the answers to, you know, to make it so that to make sure or try to help you make sure that how you word it, and they're not telling you what to say, but how you word it is going to be more to help you get the exemption versus your company saying, nope, you need the jab or goodbye, whatever that may be. But yeah, just, hey, Greg, can you hear me? I guess you can because you rang the bell. Oops, Greg, I still can't hear you. All right. You may have to call back on your cell phone. Don't you just love technology? I always said I should have been born 100 years earlier and not have to deal with any of this stuff. It's amazing because technology, to me, it's the best of times and the worst of times. When it works, it works. But when it doesn't, it's like, oh, my gosh, it can be a problem. And so, oh, man.
Yeah, I'm back.
There's
no indication. There's nothing to tell me, you know, why it's not working. So, but I try to just get Blog Talk to actually have levels like they do in the studio so that you know when you're broadcasting and when you're not. But I've reset. Reset's actually very easy. That's not the problem. But for some reason, I'm not able to log in. Or I'm not even, you know, everything's working. The mic's working. You know, everything's working. Everything's plugged in and indicating a go. And then for some reason, I had to call in. This happened before. So I don't know if it's the episode or something didn't connect properly or who knows what happened. I did everything I thought properly, and then it just didn't work.
I just know when I was doing Treehouse Talks for this site, one day my whole program didn't record. Yeah, it was just the weirdest thing. It's a fluke of nature, you know, because then tomorrow it's going to work again. But for today, for whatever reasons.
Try to stay on the phone.
Oh, right. Okay. Well, yeah, I was just talking about the friend I knew that her medical exemption was taken away from her after it was granted. And I was just wondering if there's other people out there that that's happened to. Because it's one thing, I get it, that they change their mind. But it's like, why did they change their mind at this particular time? And is the government somehow, you know, working behind the scenes again, trying to get their, you know, it's like the regime reminds me of a big bully that, you know, it's like, oh, the Fifth Court, oh, you don't have to follow what they say. No, you don't have to follow because I'm superior. It's like, no, that's not how it works. So just.
Well, there's something interesting. Something we're looking into. Yeah, first of all, I don't understand how companies can reject something they've already done and how they can't take the exemption in the first place. You know, like in Florida law, we had this thing that came out of the last special session, which says, and everybody's like, you know, cheering and saying, yeah, isn't this wonderful? You know, we have all these exemptions, you know, religious exemptions. Well, you have to have a sincere religious belief. Well, who gets to determine that? Your employer. medical exemption. Now that one's a little better. That actually has just a straight form which you sign and away you go. But what if they deny that? So there's way too much power on the people who can deny your exemption, and the idea that a company can grant an exemption and then take it away again. You know, the real problem, I think, that's going on here that we still have to find out about, it's going to be hard to find out, is the Center for Medicaid, Medi-Cal, or Medicare Funding Systems, the CMS, because I've got a report on my page sent in from a friend of mine that they get the 20% boost for pushing remdesivir. And whether or not the patient lives or dies, that doesn't matter. They still, for using it, they get a 20% boost in payments. They get payments for, remember, they're getting like $36,000 for listing a COVID death as opposed to another death. So these people are being paid somehow.
Right, and the sad thing is, yeah, Greg, that's an organization that should not even be telling people what medication to use. They're not doctors. That's the scary part. And the thing is, what they are recommending is killing people. So can people sue them? Probably not.
Not as far as I know, because vaccine manufacturers have no liability. And remdesivir, that's a Gilead drug. The FDA approved it.
No, but what I'm saying is, since they're pushing it by paying the hospitals more, is what I'm getting at. Mm-hmm. So do you think that then people can sue them because they're pushing it?
That's a good question. As far as I know, they should be able to. I mean, what happened to malpractice? You know, doctors, we remember a few years ago, the big scandal was, you know, doctors have ridiculously high payments for malpractice because they're being sued all the time. Well, why aren't they being sued now? This doesn't make any sense. So the money to pay extra workers, new workers, when everybody's laid off. I mean, not laid off, but when everybody's fired for this bogus mask, bogus vaccine mandate. You know, there's money coming in for that. There's money to hire people, pay them like $1,000 extra a shift. There's all this extra money. All that extra money is coming from somewhere. As far as I know, it's probably coming from, you know, the government health bureaucracy through the Medicaid funding system to the hospitals for a certain outcome. And the outcome is to push certain drugs that make the people in the government rich because they're getting the kickbacks, the royalties, the license fees, the patent fees, and everything else. Because, you know, there's a dispute between the National Institute of Health, an allegedly government organization, and Moderna, you know, an allegedly private corporation, over royalties over the Moderna vaccine, which is really a gene shot. And
right.
So they're fighting profits. So why is a government agency fighting over profits from a private company? Government agencies don't make profits. That's not their job. They get a budget. They have oversight. They're supposed to do certain things. And what it doesn't include is paying, you know, private industry for a particular outcome. So really, this is going to be the hard part. We really have to trace the money. We have to trace the money back to wherever it's coming from, to these hospitals, to these doctors, to pay for things that they even know don't work. Now, here's the question, too. What about the doctors that know this stuff doesn't work? Are they giving it anyway? I mean, that's a huge violation of their basic oath and their job as a doctor.
Right, but the thing is that I can't speak for them because I don't know. But I know you shouldn't assume. But the thing is, since the hospitals won't allow ivermectin and the other medications, and everybody's touting the remdesivir and then subsequently ventilators, you would think that they're just doing it. Otherwise, you know, why? I can't see what else they'd be doing.
Yeah.
I don't see how they can work under something like that. I just think that's awful. But when you're talking about, go back to the money, I wonder if Fauci's not somehow involved. And the reason I say that, everything leads back to Fauci, I swear. But the reason I say that, what is he doing with his money since he's not giving it to the Wuhan lab?
Are you talking about his tax money or his private money?
No, I was going to say the money from the government that they do go. He gets to decide who gets the funding. Most of the time, it's whoever will do the research to come up with what he wants the research to find.
Well, I think, you know, it's interesting. He illegally funded gain-of-function research in Wuhan and probably here too. We know that he'll take money and fund it however he wants. He's the one that writes grants, you know, for the universities to develop the products that they should be developing on their own, you know, from their own grant. The companies should be using their own research money to develop, not doing it. So there's a pipeline. There's a circle, and we call it the medical circle of death, if you will. You know, from Fauci and the government grant writing agencies to the universities, to from the universities to the private corporations, from the private corporations back to Fauci and the government bureaucrats. You know, so they have the tax money at first, the Fauci and crew. They give it to the universities for research and development, so they don't have to pay for anything. The companies then sell it, you know, or the research somehow probably to the private companies, so they don't have to do the research. The tax dollars pay for the production of the vaccine under warp speed for the bio shot, the bioweapon shot. So the bioweapon is given out to everybody. They mandate it now to guarantee, you know, profits. And then a certain amount of that money goes back, like I say, to Fauci and crew in the form of royalties, patents, license fees, and things like that. So everybody's making money off the tax dollars at every phase of this medical circle of death. And they don't care about the death because that's not what the job is. The job is to make money. So what the weird incentive about this is that life or death is irrelevant to the equation. It's really about how many vaccines or how many, you know, bioweapon shots they can pump into how many people. That's really where the profit comes from. So when you make life or death irrelevant and you make profit only about how much of the stuff you can pump into people, then it doesn't matter how much stuff you pump into people. And remdesivir is probably just another one of those things that has a, you know, we should look into it. They developed Gilead. They got a special license. They got all kinds of extra, you know, perks and stuff to put in the hospitals. That should never have been put in the hospitals, ever, considering
right.
you already have the cures. But if you have cures, you don't need the shots. So, you know, yeah, go ahead.
Right. And, oh, sorry. I was going to say, too, if you look at it, when they take medicines off the shelves, prescriptions off the shelves because they find out that it's doing ill harm to people, then why isn't remdesivir taken off? When you consider how many people it's killed, really, I'm speechless. I don't know how can this be going on in this country?
Good question. You know, I mean, how come, where's medical malpractice? Where's the laws that we used to go by? Something happened. Something happened in 2020 where everything got turned around and all the normal laws and all the ever since the election was stolen. It's like we've entered a completely different country where the Constitution doesn't apply, where the normal rules don't apply, where lawyers can't do their job. The only glaring exception right now is what you started talking about this morning, Kyle Rittenhouse, the one shining hope, you know, of government, and it's not government, it's the people. So the jury's proved that the people, you know, make more sense than the government. The government chose, you know, Joe Biden. The people chose Donald Trump. The people chose not guilty for Kyle Rittenhouse, whereas the government chose, you know, murder.
But the thing is, did you hear me talk that the Department of Justice is thinking about bringing charges up on him?
Of course.
I don't see how they can do that.
Because, if you abandon the law, if you abandon the Constitution, if you are allowed to remain in government by fraud, by coup, by seizing power illegally, once you've done that kind of a crime, everything else is just kind of like, you know, icing on the cake. They don't care. This is about a political agenda. This has nothing to do with justice. The Department of Justice should be abolished completely. I mean, we need to fire everybody in it and start over. You know, of course, we need to do the same with the folks who are presently occupying the White House. Yeah, so what kind of charges are they going to bring? That's going to be very interesting. I don't know what the kind of charges they're going to bring, but we're going to obviously watch it, and there's going to be a whole bunch of people opposing that.
Yes,
you know,
because that just starts an awful precedent.
Yeah.
I mean, can you imagine even if you found guilty, if the government doesn't like that you were found guilty, can they go and say, oh, no, that's not true. You're not guilty. We're gonna do this instead. I mean, they can already pardon you. But,
he was found guilty of wrongful death. In other words, he was accused of the wrongful death of Nicole Simpson and I think it was Ron Brown. And O.J. was acquitted by a jury wrongly. I mean, they screwed up that decision. They basically nullified the laws. They didn't take the evidence. I mean, they screwed up. Of course, the prosecution screwed up too. So there's a case where the jury screwed up, and then the government came in and did a civil suit. Okay, so that was like the best of a bad outcome. So the initial trial was totally botched, and yet O.J. The civil trial found him, you know, liable, even though he wasn't found guilty, which is an interesting twist of law, too. So this is the reverse of that. This is where
the civil cases, though, are very easy, much easier to get a positive outcome for if you, you know, and I get that. OJ, with him, I mean, I don't want to go too much into details, but it just has to do with, I think, you talk about lawyering, and they said the reason Kyle got off was because he had such good lawyers. Well, yeah. The thing is, the prosecution, those guys, some of those should be charged because they should be disbarred. I'm sorry, but oh my gosh, that is awful that they would do anything just to try to, you know, to get a guilty verdict. It's like, wow, mm-hmm. That's why lawyers have a sleazy image. Just look at them. But also, yeah. I think in the O.J. Simpson, the prosecutors, and why wouldn't you put experienced people on there? And not that a less experienced person wouldn't be able to do it or as good a job, but it's like, oh my God, if it doesn't fit, you gotta quit. I mean, really?
Oh,
that was brilliant. Brilliant mm-hmm. for what the defense people did. Yes. I mean, but the prosecution, yeah, it was like you would have thought it would have been a slam dunk, easy case for
mm-hmm. it
but,
was.
You know, and It's just so crazy.
You've heard the expression snatching defeat from the jaws of victory.
Yeah.
That's what happened there. Yeah.
Yeah.
But if you look at the Kyle Rittenhouse trial, it was the exact opposite. Like I said, the jury, who is independent of the government, who is actually the highest authority in the judicial system. People don't realize that. Juries can nullify laws. They can say this law is unjust. Even, you know, it's like if someone is in a non-concealed carry state, like in California, if you carry a gun openly, you know, and you're convicted of carrying a gun openly, the jury can say, well, wait a minute, the Second Amendment overrules that law. You know, we're going to find not guilty of that law because that law doesn't exist under the Constitution. So that's the proper use of jury nullification. Whereas in this case, they found that this isn't a nullification case. This is a case where they weighed the evidence and found that the state didn't prove what they were trying to prove. And so now it's interesting that you know, if the judiciary is going to go after him, that's a political thing, because the system works, and the prosecutors definitely not only need to be disbarred but brought up on charges. Because what if they've won? What if they've won the case and Kyle Rittenhouse was sentenced to, I don't know, life imprisonment, capital punishment? What if Kyle Rittenhouse was sentenced to death on prosecutorial misconduct? And that's happened a lot. That's why we have the Innocence Project. That's Jeffrey Descovich, who's been on our show a few times. You know, he was wrongfully convicted of rape and murder at the age of 17, served 16 years that he didn't know, you know, that he never did the crime. And so I know about folks that have been wrongly convicted. And so if you have a case like that, you know, why would the prosecutors be able to not be charged and not be brought up on charges, regardless of the verdict? So the verdict isn't the issue here. The issue is the conduct of the prosecutors. They lied. They withheld evidence. They sent out a substandard quality video. They didn't bring witnesses to the stand because they were known criminals, and they didn't want their records broadcast openly. I mean, they did all kinds of things wrong, and they should go to jail for what they did and go serve with the perps that they may or may not have put away. But, yeah, the prosecution sucks. In that case, and the judge is responsible. The judge should have done a lot more, too. We'll talk about that in a minute. Anyway, go ahead, what you're saying.
But I was going to say, too, with that, it was like they basically charged him in 2 days. How can you – I mean, really, you have to do a better – I guess that you could say, well, he said he shot him, so right there that tells you. But it was so interesting. All the people that the prosecution put on stand, didn't they talk to him ahead of time? To find out what they were, you know, just more about it, because all of those people, they helped him out, meaning the defense.
Yeah, that's kind of funny. Well, see, they didn't want to be up on perjury charges. See, they weren't charged with anything. But if they lied on the stand, you know, the fact that they haven't been charged with assault on Kyle Rittenhouse, which kind of surprises me too. But if they lied on the stand, they'd be guilty of perjury, especially when they're on video. It would be they have nothing to lose by telling the truth, even if they botch the prosecutor's case, and even if they implicate themselves in potential violence. They have nothing to lose because they're not being charged with anything. That
right.
in itself is a travesty. Now, the question is, will they be charged now that they said, oh, yeah, I pointed the gun at him first? I mean, that's admitting, you know, everything from brandishing to assault with a deadly weapon.
Right, but now he's backtracking and saying, no, that's not what happened. But the thing is, what is it? The one guy they said on Good Morning America basically said, you can say whatever you want, and you're safe here. And so what they're doing is they're propagating the lies. So now the guy that got his biceps blown off is going to, well, I don't, not all the media, but, you know, the the ones that can't tell the truth anyway.
He wants a book or a movie deal. There's gonna be two movies that come out of this. One by and about Kyle Rittenhouse, or one that he is the advisor on, and one that the left is going to put out propagandizing the event. So
right,
now,
guy, he already has a lawsuit out for Kyle, but based on his testimony, I don't see how anybody could award him anything.
Wait, but the guy who attacked Kyle Rittenhouse has a lawsuit against Kyle Rittenhouse?
Supposedly, yes, he had a lawsuit out. Yes.
That's funny. Yeah. Well, Kyle's lawyers are looking into suing, you know, the insurrectionist occupier of the White House.
Well, they
They are. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I heard a quote. He's got really great lawyers. They're already looking into this. Yeah, they need to go through the prosecutors and everybody else. Here's another problem, too, the judge. We don't really talk about the judge too much. Now, he's received death threats, and the left hates him because, you know, he allowed a not guilty verdict to go through. But the judge made some very serious mistakes. He never should have had the press on that trial. That was the first mistake. Second mistake was the jury should have been sequestered. They should have been locked up from the minute they walked into court. Once they established the jury, plus the alternates, I think they had like 30 or 40 alternates.
They had a lot.
But as soon as that jury was established, they should have been locked in there forever. They should not have gone home and had the danger of travel and had that MSNBC producer following the bus with the jurors in it. I mean, come on.
Right.
It's been expensive, but they got news reports. They got a lot of pressure. You know, despite the pressure, they did the right thing. Now those folks have to watch out for themselves. Now they need to be all carrying firearms and protect themselves, and their families have to watch out and everything else. You know, because the left does what the left does, and we have heard hopefully nothing. God forbid anything happens to them, but I'd be worried about them. But let's do a little contrast here with this story and the story. Let me get his name up here. The perpetrator, the black perpetrator whose face you don't see because he's black, I imagine. Tony Pianchian on this one. It is one Daryl E. Brooks, who plowed his SUV into a crowd of people at a Waukesha, Wisconsin parade, killed 5 people, injured 40 people, and he's out the next day, or he's out that day on $1,000 bail. And you want to talk about a travesty of justice? Compare that to Kyle Rittenhouse, all right, who had was self-defense, who never should have been brought up on charges, but was labeled a white supremacist. And here's a black supremacist, all right, who I imagine – I haven't seen the pictures, but I saw one picture, one victim who's white. I'm guessing Waukesha, Wisconsin is a pretty, you know, dominantly white area. So here we have a black, you know, alleged murderer plowing into a bunch of white people in a parade in Wisconsin, a Christmas parade, in a nice little suburban area of Milwaukee, and yet you can't find pictures of the victims. And this guy gets out on $1,000 bail. All right.
Right.
You want to talk about a crime? This is a crime. And I got an article. Let me just do this real quickly here. And again, we got plenty of time for more stories. Shelby's going to join us in about 20 minutes here. Let me just pull up this article here. And this is from I think this is Gateway Pundit. I got a couple of them. Wait a minute. I've got this story already. I'm going to close that window. Let me bring this one up here. Here we go. Yes, from Gateway Pundit. Waukesha mass murderer was released from DA John Chisholm's Milwaukee County, where only one-third of all criminal referrals from police result in charges. It says it's no surprise that the Waukesha mass murderer was released from District Attorney John Chisholm's Milwaukee County. He says, in the aftermath of a Waukesha car attack that left multiple locals dead and dozens wounded, Milwaukee County District Attorney John Chisholm has called for an investigation into the inappropriately low cash bond offered to alleged perpetrator Daryl Brooks Jr. After his cash bail was posted for $1,000, Brooks was able to leave prison where he was incarcerated for other serious offenses in a matter of days. No, something's wrong here because it's John Chisholm's the one that let him out early. All right, let me read this over here. But what do you think? Just the difference, the fact that this guy got out that early. Let me try a different article here.
It's crazy. And if you look at how much bond was set for Kyle Rittenhouse when he never had a history of crime before that, so it doesn't make any sense because it was. Also in that case, too, which is interesting, people are all upset because the judge won't allow anybody to call the people that were killed victims. And the thing is, I'm glad he did that for the fact that they were the perpetrators. They were instigating stuff. And they said that the, which one was it? I don't know if it was the one that got his biceps blown off or one of them. Like they were saying,
yeah.
Kyle shouldn't have been there. They said the other, I think that was him. They said he shouldn't have been there because he drove 40 miles with his gun. And he also said he was telling people that he was a paramedic and his paramedic license or whatever had expired 4 years before that.
Wait,
so
they were 18, 17 years old. What, do you have a paramedic license at 13?
No, this was the other guy that was actually the truth. The other guy drove the 40 miles with a gun and his saying he was – I mean, because actually their stories are similar as far as, well, Kyle didn't drive that much with the gun because the gun was in Wisconsin, even though they said he took it over state lines. But just interesting because I don't know what I was listening to yesterday, and they go, yeah, you'd think they were talking about Kyle, but they're not. They're talking about – and I forget which one it was. I think it was the one that got his biceps blown off, but I could be wrong. But, yeah, it's just – it's so interesting how the media – and it continues uh-huh. to depends on, you know, what side you're on, which is really sad. It shouldn't matter what side you're on. You should be on the side of justice and wanting, demanding justice because that's
yep.
all, you know, all I care about is I just want to know and the truth or what happened as much as we can, because really you'll never know. And one thing I wish now Kyle would just, I don't want to say go in a corner. I just wish he would take some time away from the media. But, you know, like, and I don't know what the deal was with Tucker Carlson and what if he posted some of the bond or what all happened. But I guess he had more privileges, too, than a lot of other news
yeah.
people did. And I disagree with that. But Kyle just needs to take some time. I mean, I was listening to a little bit of what he said based on the recordings on Facebook this morning. And it's like he could talk now, but how much of that? And I know even on, when he was on in testimony, testifying,
uh-huh.
so much of it, it's like, I'm sure you just remember it like it was not yesterday, like 5 minutes ago. It's so vivid,
right.
And I know he's getting counseling for post-traumatic stress and all that. But the thing is, some of the stuff, okay, do you really remember it to that detail if you were traumatized, if you were in shock? I mean, if I was in shock, when I know of people in shock, they don't mm-hmm. remember a whole lot of things. And so it's like, I think less is better in this case. He could come out later and talk, write a book, whatever he wants to do. But I mean, people are out for his life. I would say quietly, not go away, but quietly live your life for a while and just, you know, acclimate back into it gradually versus going on all these news shows and stuff, because that's just going to, I mean, even like his lawyer, how many news shows he was on, and I guess he wanted to continue his 5 minutes of fame, but I'm like,
mm-hmm.
oh my gosh, it's just crazy.
Yeah, it's, you know, there's two theories here. One, you sort of go away and get some perspective, and two, you strike while the iron's hot, as they say. And so, you know, I imagine that comes from the horrible practice of branding, you know, but that's, you know, that's an interesting, you know, philosophy on this. I don't know what's going to happen. I mean, obviously his life has changed. I think the best thing you could do is talk to Nick Sandman. Okay. You know, because he's been through this. So I think some tells you they're going to be buds real fast here. And so, you know, the question is, first of all, Kyle needs really good family around him, and hopefully he has a really good family. I'm guessing so, given his upbringing, the fact that he wanted to help out. The idea that he brought a firearm 40 miles away, I mean, there are people that came from all over. Remember all the people that went to the Bundy Ranch?
No, but I don't think he brought it 40 miles away. That was the other guy.
Oh, okay.
That was shot.
However far away Kyle brought his gun,
yeah.
You know, He was, I don't know how many people, but there were a whole lot of people with AR-15s, and the whole purpose was to stop the rioters. These people were
right.
not peaceful protesting. They were rioters, all right? There's no right to riot. There's a riot act. You know, it's crazy how this works, but yet that's what's going on. Anyway, Pianki's on the line, and let's bring him onto the show as well. And Jean,
then,
if you have other stories about 15
yes,
minutes,
I want to just talk about one other thing, and this really bothers me. And
okay,
for
ahead.
Those of you that work in the military, I just call in, let us know. But someone I know was telling me over the weekend that the military base that he's on, and he works as a civilian, But the military base he is on, we're told they have to have their vax passports with them at all times, because anybody could ask him for the papers, and if they don't have them, then they have to, you know, they're done. And so this is ludicrous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, great way to get rid of people in the military you don't like. You just ask for their, especially if they they don't want the bioweapon shot. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. I couldn't believe they're doing that. It's like, are we not in China or someplace? I could see if it worked. But show me the proof that it actually works. And you know, the sad thing is more and more people are coming out about how the vaccine, how it's harmed them and their loved ones. But no, that's pushed under the rug. I just think that is so sad.
Well, I just got something from Gateway Pundit. Let me get the headline here. We haven't done vaccine reports for a while, but we got here. Gateway Pundit, November 21st, attorney releases first pages from subpoenaed FDA files, shows Pfizer documented, are you ready, 158,893 adverse events with 25,957 nervous system disorders in the first few months after distribution of their bioweapon shot. Okay, and so the bioweapon came out, and I'm going to call that, for folks who don't know, that's the messenger RNA. That's what we're calling the Pfizer vaccine. So sometimes I have to speak in, you know, I like to use correct language, but when you don't know what I'm talking about, I have to, you know, give the details. So Pfizer vaccine comes out in December, and they're talking February, March. They'd already had 158,893 adverse events. We've got attorney Aaron Seary, managing partner of Seary and Gilmstead, published his first report on the information he received from the FDA. This is a report by Jim Hoft, who's the editor of Gateway Pundit, November 21st, 4:58 p.m., if you're checking. Aaron Seary has a history of representing people for vaccination injury for quite a while. He recently told the U.S. panel discussion, led by Senator Ron Johnson, one of the good guys, that during the COVID crisis, their phones have reached an avalanche of requests. Aaron added, if we actually sued all of the pharmaceutical companies for all of the complaints, it would actually be impossible for all of the attorneys around the country, around 100, to handle all those matters. So let me give you some quick numbers here. The numbers are, from the VAERS system, the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, VAERS, 1,742,468 reports of adverse events from the COVID vaccines. 18,853 COVID vaccine reported deaths. We've got 94,537 total COVID vaccine reported hospitalizations, 174,987 total reported hospitalizations. We got two of them here. So COVID vaccine, and I guess they got 174,000 other stuff, and they got 894,143 COVID vaccine adverse events reports. You didn't hear that on the news, did you? Let's bring Piaki in.
Wow.
I got 10 minutes before Jeanine. Yeah.
Wow.
I'm on my
good morning.
You guys are crackling this morning. Loud and clear and powerful.
You can hear me?
It's been a morning.
Yeah, I can't use my microphone. Really? I have no idea why. It's just not working today.
You know, maybe that this character that was driving that car through the parade, maybe he's suffering from an adverse effect of the COVID vaccine.
You know, that raises a fascinating question. Gene, you're our resident health expert on the show right now. Or could that be a legal defense at some point, either now or in the future? Someone says, look, I got the shot, man. It's messed with my whatever. I'm not responsible. When you think the Twinkie defense was bad, what do you think of this one?
Well, you know, I could see it happening. You know, who's to say it's true or not? Because there's no research done on it, so, and no one knows.
Yeah. I want to know why he's not classified as black supremacist perpetrator off on $1,000 bail after killing five people and injuring 40. You know, the race is never mentioned. I know, that's why I was glad Piaki called it on this. But, you know, and I'm guessing, like I said, I can't find pictures of the victims, so I'm guessing they're white. You know, so this is Kyle Rittenhouse, white supremacist, you know, Kyle Rittenhouse, who, you know, in self-defense, defends himself against other white people, you know, and all of a sudden he's a white supremacist. But this guy, and there's something wrong with the news reports, because I think they're confusing John Chisholm, the DA, with the person that's actually investigating him for a ridiculously low bail of $1,000. Did Kyle Rittenhouse even get a bail?
It was a lot, because now they're squabbling about who gets the bail money back.
Okay. So this guy gets $1,000 bail. And it's pretty, you know, there are cases where there's a lot of doubt as to who did it. I don't think there's a whole lot of doubt that he did it. Wasn't he arrested at the scene?
No, I don't think. I don't think so, but I don't
this
know.
This is what he done. This is what this idiot done. He drove his car home and parked it in the driveway with the front end pointed out toward the street. That's the front end was damaged terribly. You know, if he had any sense, he would have parked it in the garage and went to Home Depot and got some canned paint and repainted. But that's just the mentality of these people. And this man is a racist.
Something and burned
he,
it.
He committed a racist act.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm well, everybody he hit ran over with white. It was a white parade, basically.
It was so sad, especially with, you know, they didn't have it last year because of COVID. This is a way for them just, you know, kids, whoever, to get out and just, you know, enjoy the season. And, I mean, can you imagine the, oh, my God, just the, you talk about post-traumatic stress and all that. Those poor people, oh, my gosh.
Well, what if there was a white person
you had
the Martin Luther King parade, you know, and killed 5 people and injured 40? Do you think they'd be out on $1,000 bail?
Oh, hell no. See, this man has got what's called the old-fashioned raps sheet.
Okay.
He's been in and out of jail so much.
Right.
And even now, I think that day he's probably still out with something pending. But he should have been locked up. But that's what you call, but that's that black privilege again. He should have been locked up. Look what happened in Charleston when you had the white person that ran and hit the white girl, white lady that is, she was young. And look at all the accolades they called him. White supremacy, a Nazi, and so on, so on, so on. So at least if what he done is nowhere near what that is this guy's done, he doesn't get those same type of accolades.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it definitely. I talk about it. I put a caption on that. You know, not on that one. Well, Daryl E. Brooks is who we're talking about. If anybody wants to look it up, I actually found this picture on CNN, which kind of surprised me. No, MSN.com is where I found it. But, but then we have a story here. Gateway Pundit has the one on, once again, black privilege rears its ugly head as black vehicular assassin gets minimal bail and is released on the same day. The person responsible is Milwaukee County District Attorney, and that would be John Chisholm. And so he's being investigated for a ridiculously low bail. But I think the news kind of screwed it up because they had him as investigating himself for the low bail, and that doesn't make any sense. So we're going to have to trace it and find exactly what the real situation is. But John Chisholm is, of course, a Soros, George Soros product. Let me see the big league politics story right here, which says, Milwaukee County District Attorney John Chisholm bragged about eliminating cash bail in the county, a policy decision many have criticized following revelations surrounding the criminal history of arrested Waukesha suspect Daryl E. Brooks. Brooks had been released from the Milwaukee County Jail just 2 days before the ramming attack at the Christmas parade. The career criminal is already facing charges of being in possession of a weapon as a convicted felon, already possessing felony sex crimes, strangulation, assault, and drug convictions. This guy gets $1,000 bail. The article says Brooke has proved capable of leaving jail with little more than $1,000 bond, an astonishing low price for a career criminal with a plethora of violent convictions. And this is in Big League Politics by Richard Moorhead, November 22nd, so yesterday. Wow.
Are people riding because of that? It's just so sad. But I blame the mainstream media a lot too, because with the Kyle Rittenhouse case, how they spewed the truth of even what was going on during the trial. It's like that is so uncalled for.
Yeah, but
and
really,
you're right, Gene. Where's the riot set because of this?
Yeah,
this guy
those
was
people's lives
a,
didn't matter.
He's a member of some black nationalist organization. Where's the FBI going by his house and looking at the pictures on the wall, confiscating his books and all that mess?
Do you know if he's in a black supremacist organization or black nationalist organization? Has that been a story on that, or you suspect it, or what? I'm curious.
Well, I suspected. Okay. I suspected, and I thought I heard somebody make mention to it. Well, hell, even if he's just a member of BLM, what is that? And you know the
well,
thing, too,
exactly.
Gene, he was, what Gene was talking about.
Pardon me? Has BLM come out in support of him? Are there any black activists, you know, Marxist black activists who said, you know, it's okay to kill Whitey, what's the big deal? I mean, you know, is there anything like that being said?
I haven't heard that yet. You know, it's just, it's funny that people can't speak out loud. I mean, think out loud, that is.
We do. We do right here. Yeah. Let's, in fact, Gene, if you have a second, can you do a quick search and see if there's any, you know, black commentators, you know, especially leftist Marxist black commentators on Daryl E. Brooks, you know, and the Waukesha thing. And I still want to find pictures. I want to post pictures of the victims. You know, like I say, I can't guarantee it, but Waukesha, as I understand, is a very white community in a very white suburban area of Milwaukee.
Okay, black. What did you want me to look up? Black commentators for what? Sorry,
for Daryl Brooks, any support for radical black activists for Daryl Brooks, you know, the people that talk about white privilege
right.
all the time, the people that, you know, let's, who would be a good person to, Ilhan Omar, let's see what she says about this, or any of the folks that, you know, get away with using terms like white privilege, white nationalist, white supremacist, which to me are incredibly offensive terms. In fact, I'd love to be on The View sometime and say, wait a minute, you can't say white privilege, especially as a non-white person. That's offensive.
They're not going to let you on there.
Yeah, why not? This is my dream. This is my dream conversation one day, to be on The View, and Action Radio has 10 million listeners, and they don't have a choice because they're curious. You know, but I'd love to be like, or on some kind of leftist show at some point and just be able to argue with these people right in their face. But I don't know. We all have our dreams. But this is. But they could say that. I mean, Pianki, you know, it's not beyond the realm of possibility that some activist, Marxist, leftist, black advocate would say that, well, you know, we have to understand he had a horrible past. You know, he's a victim of racism. You know, he wasn't responsible for what he did. He probably had the vaccine, too. I'm not going to say that. But I'd be very curious to see if there's any sympathy for this guy at all. What do you think?
Well, you know, I suspect that, you know, years ago they used to have these experiments in these northern cities. And they had it in Shakers Heights, Ohio, too. And basically what they opened doors for blacks to move into these communities in order to try to produce the ideal integrated setting.
Mm-hmm.
And they practically went out of their way in order to do so. I know in Shakers Heights they did because they was, I heard them talking. I heard some reports on that. But Minnesota, Minneapolis, you see a lot of African immigrants being inserted in these northern areas, North Dakota up there in Minneapolis. That's why you got so many Somalis up there.
Yes, Somalis.
And these
exactly.
experiments turn out to be total failures, especially for
the
people that
have
been there.
You know, it's
well, that's what they call social engineering. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. Yeah, if you look at communities of like poor black neighborhoods, I mean, you have a sort of singular racial group, and that's the Democrat plantation right there. But if you want to see integration, natural integration, look at a middle class suburban neighborhood in all kinds of, maybe not in Waukesha, Wisconsin, because it's freaking cold up there. But you look at some of the Midwest, southern states, western states, you'll find a lot of middle class suburban neighborhoods that have all kinds of folks of different races, backgrounds, and stuff. But it's the increase in income, it's the moving up in society that creates a natural integration because, you know, black people, white people, you know, folks from India, folks from Nigeria, folks from various Asian countries want to be middle class, you know, compared to lower income. And then from middle class, they want to be upper middle class. And then from there, they want to be rich. That's just a normal progression of families as they go through generations. So we have a natural integration that goes on right now as black families and Hispanic families, you know, move up from lower income to middle income. And the government has nothing to do with that. It's just the fact that people are getting more successful over the generations, which is the idea. You know, a Vietnamese person who was like a doctor in their country comes here, escapes like a boat person. They come here and they set up a small shop because they can't be a doctor right away, but their kids can. And then the kids go on, and then those kids, you know, become specialists and surgeons, you know. And so the generations move up the economic scale and naturally integrate our neighborhoods. And the government has nothing to do with that. And that's how it's supposed to work. So this idea that they have to create these artificial communities, you know, we're going to force integration with people that don't want to be integrated, doesn't work. But if you just leave it to the natural economics, natural economic upper, you know, middle class, you know, from lower income to middle income to upper income, there's a natural integration there. This is the way it looks to me.
Well, yeah, the look at Jamaica, Queens there in New York. That's a very stable and the Jamaicans there, their income, household income is above the average there in the United States. So you're absolutely right.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay. So we're going to get Shelby calling back here in a minute. She was already on earlier. But she should be back here in a few minutes, and then she'll get going. So before she gets on, let me just play our Santa Rosa Volunteers piece, because I have a feeling we're going to get busy again, and this would be a good time to take a little bit of a break. And let me get my latest. Yeah, I'm going to try and keep them to 5 minutes. This one's about just over 5 minutes, but hopefully this will work out. And then we'll get Shelby on. We'll continue. We have the reporters today, Jean, Shelby, Josie, Paulette, and Chansey. So it's going to be a very interesting, very busy Tuesday. I'll be right back in a few minutes.
This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, insights into our founding documents, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. In Federalist Paper number 7, Alexander Hamilton once again beats the same dead horse he trotted out in his first Federalist Paper, that the Constitution has to be ratified or the states will end up divided in three or so groups or will cause other nations to invade us. Upping the ante now, he claims that we will all be at war with ourselves in this paper, and once again the cure is to ratify the Constitution. Ironic again that the Constitution was in full force when the states did divide, but in a unified way against the federal government created by the Constitution and not in the three or four separate confederacies as argued by Hamilton and the Federalists, but one confederacy of states who were run by the Democrat Party. Be careful what you wish for. Hamilton begins with this question. It is sometimes asked with an air of seeming triumph, what inducements could the states have if disunited to make war upon each other? This is a preposterous question, given that the states were united under the Articles of the Confederacy, and that no states were at war or were, to my knowledge, trying to take each other's territory. So Hamilton asks a question that requires an assumption that doesn't exist. Therefore, a legitimate answer cannot be given. But that's not the point of the question. The point is to plant in your brain that if the states became disunited, what would save the Union? And the only answer Hamilton wants you to consider is the new Constitution. Hamilton also says, we have a vast tract of unsettled territory within the boundaries of the United States. There are still discordant and undecided claims between several of them, and the dissolution of the Union would lay a foundation for similar claims between them all. Well, yes, the dissolution of the Union would cause territorial disputes, but to use that as a reason to ratify the Constitution, you have to believe two things. One, that there is going to be a dissolution of the Union under the Articles of Confederation, and two, that there will be no dissolution of the Union nor any territorial disputes if the Constitution is ratified. Both of those are impossible to argue as connected or even probable individually. Therefore, the argument for the Constitution from the Federalists is based solely on their fertile imagination of what they think will scare the people who would vote to ratify the Constitution the most. If this is in fact the case, then the Constitution was argued from a huge pyramid of ever-increasing lies designed to channel all thinking to a predetermined outcome without real examination, because the building block evidence and arguments of the Federalists crumble at the slightest scrutiny. They knew that, but argued it that way anyway. Kind of sounds like the government position on COVID since early 2020. Hamilton concludes, from the view they have exhibited of this part of the subject, this conclusion is to be drawn, that America, if not connected at all, or only by the feeble tie of a simple league, offensive and defensive, would, by the operation of such jarring alliances, be gradually entangled in all the pernicious labyrinths of European politics and wars, and by the destructive contentions of the parts into which she was divided, would be likely to become a prey to the artifices and machinations of powers equally the enemies of all of them. Divide and conquer must be the motto of every nation that either hates or fears us. At the end of this Federalist paper, Alexander Hamilton has tied together every preposterous proposition he is making with the hope that enough bogus fears will be grouped together, and the simple weight of numbers of so many ridiculous assumptions will somehow, as a group, give them credibility. Divide and conquer. I wonder if he would have used race like it's used today, if he could. The source for the Federalist Papers is federalistpapers.org. The Anti-Federalist Papers are from selfeducatedamerican.com. The Articles of Confederation are from usconstitution.net. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website is srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it. Yeah, man. Como Michelle, to faraway places, wonderful beaches, exotic foods, meet new and fascinating people as Action Radio cruise and travel reporter Shelby Finette takes you to where dreams become your reality and experiences become your best memories. Yeah, man. Here we go.
And making a return engagement today for the second time, helping us out incredibly in the first hour, the one and only Shelby Frenette with our cruise and travel report. So welcome back. Thanks for your help earlier. I don't know what happened. I'm on my cell phone.
Oh, gosh, yeah. I'm glad I was around.
Yeah,
thanks for having me. I'm sorry I had a sabbatical. I was traveling.
Well, that makes sense. Okay, yeah, well, you are the travel person. So, we have heard from you for a little bit, and so I'm really happy to be able to catch up and see what's going on in the world of travel. So feel free to recap or bring us something new or whatever's going on in the world, because we want to get traveling. We want to go places. We want to go have fun. What's happening?
No, it's definitely a transitional time. I will say yesterday was a super exciting day for Travel Fun, our company, travelfun.biz. It was the first time since COVID, which I feel like was almost 2 years ago, that we were actually promoting, you know, and then COVID happened around March, and that where they shut everything down. But it was the first time that we launched anything, and the phones were overwhelmed, and bookings came in, and people were messaging us like crazy, and it felt so amazing to finally have that travel is back feeling. And there, you know, we tried to offer for two people. We tried to offer for unvaccinated, and of course we cruised, and they're still requiring vaccinations. But we did put some unvaccinated for our unvaccinated friends, some resort trips too. So
yeah,
that's
choice.
What happened yesterday.
We need vax choice.
Yeah.
So is there any?
No,
is there any cruise ships? I know there was one that was going to take unvaccinated people. So now is there no cruise lines taking unvaccinated people?
Yeah, you're correct. No one is taking unvaxxed right now, except for under 5 years old. A few of the cruise lines are. Right now, MSC is the cruise line you're talking about, I believe. And they were definitely considering doing both choices because they had sailed through COVID unvaxxed, and they had the testing protocols, and really everybody, that they're the gold standard of what everybody has utilized, as you know, as far as air filtration, cleanliness, you know, all of the testing procedures. They utilized that template, but yet once the vaccines came out and all the cruise ships started opening, then MSC turned into vaccines as well. So I have a BDM there that we talk quite often, and he had said that they were thinking of removing that just vaccine option, you know, having choice, as you mentioned, in November, but that came and passed, and now they're saying maybe in 2022. So we'll see. I feel like it's it's just one of these things where the ball is rolling downhill, and it doesn't really make sense, because now, especially that they have, you know, the pill that they've come up with that's, I think, very similar to what you guys have been promoting, the antiviral. Once they come out with that,
this is the big question. No, you're hitting a real, this is a real hot button here. So what exactly is in that pill, that COVID pill? Because we've been joking around here for a while that it's full of ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine, and they're putting one extra, you know, element in there. I don't know,
right.
Sugar. They're putting something in there. So
right.
They can patent it.
That is,
That's what we're kind of, but we don't know. Do you know the ingredients? Has anybody disclosed what's actually in the COVID pill?
Right. One of my friends and relatives, actually, that really follows this very closely, like you, he has mentioned that it was very similar. The ingredients were very similar. I haven't actually seen them, but definitely similar to ivermectin is what he had mentioned. And like I said, And exactly to your point, his feeling is that they just changed it slightly so that they could, you know, make money off it again. It's not anything that different. It's just that they, you know, want to re-patent it. And this is a pharmaceutical way. It's always about the patents. In fact, one of the best documentaries I saw, and I don't want to get off topic too much because there is a lot to talk about with travel, but is this drug documentary where really the heroin epidemic that we're having now had stemmed from oxycodone dependency, which was a big proponent that happened from the medical industry just because the patent was wearing out on the drug that they usually give people with high pain. And they just wanted to promote a new drug that had a new patent. And this drug, albeit very, very addictive, and some doctors came to the forefront and said, this isn't a good choice. Why are we using something new? You know, this has a really highly addictive quality. You know, they just made propaganda, and the drug companies pushed oxycodone out, and that's what the people were told to give them. And they even had as one of the representative sales reps that used to be a pharmaceutical rep, and she said, you know, it was interesting. You didn't need to have the training that you used to have, but here I was promoting that it was safe, and it was safe by an American. They had some sort of name of American safety, you know, medicine, but that happened to be, she found out, not an actual, there was like a shell company that was designed by the pharmaceutical company so that they could have that resource of information to be appearing legitimate and safe. And she felt very badly that she had been a part of it. She had, you know, been in it and really heard the snow. The world was over her eyes. She was snowed. And oxycodone, I think we all know now, has been a huge problem. And it brings people to a heroin problem because they just end up not being able to afford the oxycodone. And heroin is the next cheapest readily available option.
Well, they're opiate.
And
they're all the same.
Yeah. And but it all stemmed from this patent, that they couldn't patent the drug. The patent was wearing out on the drug that was working. So this whole thing happened because the pharmaceutical agencies designed a drug that they could sell and make more money off of because the patent was leaving. So to your point with the patent and having a new drug that does work, that was very much like an old drug that did work, is a very plausible possibility. So that's, but regardless, for travel, if this drug is approved and whatever they charge for it and make off it, if it's working, then it seems to be like a moot point with the vaccine, right? Because if you can cure it with the pill, it doesn't make any sense. However, we are in a situation with the cruise lines where, you know, protocols and everything is kind of running like a ball downhill. Will they reverse that? I really don't know. I hate to hazard a guess at this point, but I would suspect that since now the media has not been focused on any negativity towards cruises, for some reason they've, you know, changed their focal point, that, that I feel like it's starting to, the sentiment, as we call it in social media, the social sentiment of people is that they're starting to be ready to cruise. They like to cruise. They just don't want to get vaccinated. They feel safe cruising, but they don't want to be vaccinated. I think that that population is vast, and I hope that the cruise ships will start to reconsider what their options are and give a choice. But at this point, no, it's all vaccinated for cruise ships, but we do have a singles three-night stay Christmas, a Cancun crazy Christmas that welcomes unvaccinated, and you just have to be tested on the way back, like like I had mentioned when I went to Mexico a couple months back. So that's all real stuff, and we're getting real inquiries and bookings, and so we are starting to see some semblance of travel, so that's exciting.
Yeah, what changed, do you think, to cause it to happen now? Because the economy sucks. You know, the gas prices are high, inflation's high. You know, is it that people have been cooped up so long they don't care, they want to travel anyway, or is there – because this is – I mean, this is kind of like a travel season for the snowbirds, but why now? What do you think is happening?
Yeah, I think it's just – really, I think it's time, and I think the media isn't focused on the way they were, how dangerous everything was. You know, they're not focused on that. And, you know, the media is really sending out the messages. I remember when someone asked me, when is it going to be – when are we going to be cruising again? I said, when the media tells you you can, you know, that's where people are, even if they don't think they're getting their information there, that's how they're thinking, and they don't realize it. They're basing, their feelings are directly correlated with the media's presentation, and I just don't think they realize that, you know?
Hmm. Yeah, it's too bad there isn't an information source from either the cruise lines or the CLIA cruise line, whatever.
Absolutely.
International.
Yeah,
just talk about
it's
how
really
cruising
disappointing.
Is.
It is. It's disappointing. Kelly Craighead is the president of the CLIA Association. I did get to speak with her at the CLIA conference. I haven't been in any conversations with her since, but she was on a Condé Nast webinar that I was on the other day. And again, they have good, like they have messaging, but they're not sending it out. Like she has canistered messaging of how to, you know, speak to your loved ones about cruising if they have these trepidations and the facts versus the myths. But they're not promoting it on social media effectively at all. And I keep telling them, like, really, let me help you. But apparently they don't want my help.
Oh, listen, I know that feeling.
It's so sad.
Yeah, I tried to help the Florida State Legislature with a couple of bills that were far more comprehensive and better than the crap they were cranking out. And, you know, despite press releases and contacts and emails, it didn't work. So I know that feeling. But, you know, if they just pull up one of those old, you know, come back to Jamaica ads, you know, with the beautiful music and then the nice voice, you know, come back to Jamaica, you know, you look at your theme. Your theme is kind of in that kind of thing. I mean, you listen to your travel theme for your report. Does that make you want to go travel? I mean, that's why I made it that way, despite my rather bad Caribbean accent. But the point is...
Yeah, it's unfortunate. The people in charge are like, it's very untouchables, you know, and they all think they're experts, even though you can't possibly be an expert on everything. In fact, one of my biggest issues of like the CLIA conference with social media is that they kept promoting TikTok, and I kept saying, you know, this is silly. Like, first of all, I'm not saying TikTok isn't a huge thing, because it is, and it probably will be in the next 2 or 3 years, but it is far too complicated for most travel agents in that age range of like 40, 50, 60 to really get good at. And it's not where people are buying travel for the most part. I mean, not even close. So she keeps, they keep like saying TikTok, like they are the knowledgeable source. And I'm like, I'm in social media. Believe me, that's not where they should be. And you shouldn't be distracting them with that, because then they think they're missing out on something big and they're not focused on what really will work, which is Facebook and Instagram more now. But,
yeah,
you know,
TikTok is a product of the Chinese Communist Party. It's well documented. Dr. Claire Lopez especially, but it's well documented that TikTok has artificial intelligence that basically uses – every time you log on to TikTok, it's a personal information drain. So they're collecting information on everybody. God knows why, but they're collecting information on everybody for whatever reason the communists are using to use against us. I would have nothing to, quite honestly, I would never log on to TikTok. I don't even look at TikTok videos on other people's, you know, when I see a messenger, it's like, you really want to avoid it at all costs. It's, unless you want to have, you
well,
know,
and
total
I
brain drain.
I understand
your
point of view and that aspect of things, but most people don't feel that way. They're just doing it for entertainment sources and they don't really care about their data.
But regardless,
just on a social media standpoint, it's not effective. So stop like distracting your travel agents. Your CLIA is the cruising industry, and that should be the last thing you say is TikTok. You don't need to mention TikTok, but of course they want to act like they know what they're talking about, and they're being fed misinformation. anyway, they didn't.
Make
they certainly haven't gotten the message out.
Can you make them a sample ad? If you're on social media, you could actually create your own ad, make your own video, put some nice music in the background. You can make a travel ad that would be good. You know, we'll post it on our site and send it to your friends and say, does this make you want to cruise more? And then send it into some of these cruise lines and send it into CLIA and say, look, this ad's really popular among my friends, and I'm in the travel biz and social media, and you'd be a huge representative. In fact, you'd make a dynamite commercial, I think, just for the cruising. You know, get your big, sweet, angelic face on the camera and, you know, with a nice little, you know, Bahamas scene in the background or a cruise ship sailing by, do a little Photoshop, a little editing there. You can make a great travel ad. Think about it.
Thank you. Well, it's a great idea. I mean, it's all time, and it's I feel like very often it doesn't matter what we produce for people. If they're not – if it's not their idea, it's not a good idea, you know, and – they don't really love people going off to them. In fact, I had made a great little ad about when I met her, and they immediately ripped it off their internal system and said that, and it was beautiful because I photoshopped it and I had the cruise ships in the back and the CLIA, you know, emblem. And they said, oh, it looks like she's promoting you. I'm like, oh, my gosh, this is insane. Like, you can't do anything good. It just attracts too much attention. Unless it's their idea, it's not a good idea.
Yeah, no good idea. So it's punished. Hey, listen, try selling
Action
Radio.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like, how many hours am I going to spend? I'd rather book a few more people at our singles groups. In a day. But anyway, travel's coming back, which is great. But, you know, I'm trying to focus on the good. But it's been, this whole experience has been insanely frustrating and demoralizing and, you know, economically, financially debilitating. And I don't know how much more anyone can really take, but I feel like right now the focus in the media is not on negative travel, so that's good for us, but I still don't like playing the game, but it's not, I'm not making the rules, you know?
Gene Pianchi,
I've got a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Where is some places for people are good to travel right now? Is there any countries or anything like that that are really open to having tourists and stuff like that, or is not really?
Yeah, I mean, most of the countries are open to having tourists now, but you have to be vaccinated. Mexico is still the best place as far as I'm concerned. Coming from the U.S., it's North America, so the restrictions are a lot less, and they are not making anyone do anything. They really are operating as they used to, only at less capacity, and they're giving tests at the end, and there's also a lot of sanitizer around. But nothing else has changed in Mexico. And so that's, to me, like the easiest trip for people that don't want to get vaccinated. That's really the easiest answer. Costa Rica used to be, but they also have mandatory vaccinations now coming in January. You don't have to be vaccinated to go into the country, but you have to be vaccinated to go to any business. So it's a little bit like, wow, that seems really harsh because, for instance, we had a big yoga retreat that we're working with one of my really amazing people locally, my neighbor. She owns a hot yoga studio, and she's doing a Costa Rica retreat. And one of the reasons we wanted to work with her on this and promote for her is because it was unvaccinated, we're welcome as well. But now that's changed. So I don't know of many islands that aren't requiring vaccination, or many countries mostly are. But Mexico is the easiest one and still has no vaccine requirements to enter the country, just a test to leave.
Can you drink the local water yet? Because when I was there about 11 years ago, you know, they were still advising, you know, drink the bottled water, drink the beer, drink anything but the local water.
They definitely still keep to that. And I would say every time I go to Mexico, and I have very sensitive digestion, but I also, you know, I know travel the way my stomach gets. I always have issues there, like always, and I don't drink the water, but you can't get away from drinking some of the water because it's in the food, you know, and things are, you know, you just can't completely get away from it. But they still don't advise. They always drink bottled water and things. If you're going to make anything, they make their ice generally at the resorts. They make their ice with filtered water as well, so that you're not getting sick. But if you drink from the tap, you will probably have some gastrointestinal issues just because the buggies are a little different than the ones we have here.
Yeah, drink tea or coffee, anything where the water's boiled. But this is fascinating to me that they're so strict on COVID, which is really a low mortality rate overall, unless you're, you know, in one of the really high-risk groups. They're going crazy over COVID and vaccines and all that kind of stuff, yet they still haven't fixed their water. I just find that interesting.
Well, I don't think Mexico is going crazy over COVID, but they're definitely trying to play the game as neutral as possible and just keep their stuff going. I also find it hilarious, and no, maybe hilarious isn't the right word, but amusing that I don't know anyone that's actually tested positive when they've left Mexico. Like, and when I asked one of the hoteliers, I said, does anyone actually test positive when they leave? It's impossible not to. I mean, even if you don't have the actual symptoms, I can't imagine with all the traveling to these resorts that they don't have some sort of positive results, especially when we were in the West Coast, because of the fact that it was mostly people from California who apparently have a variable there. So, you know, you'd think there's got to be some, within the traveling that you did, you have to have some people that test positive on the way back. But the hotelier said, we don't sell positive tests here in Mexico. I said, oh, wow. That's interesting. But, yeah, I don't know of anyone that's tested positive on their way
back.
Well,
they don't want it positive. They're responsible. But, you know, they want your money to come in, which most countries, obviously, I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but they want the tourist dollars to come in. They don't have to spend more money on tourists to keep them there when it's time to go home. That makes perfect sense.
Yeah, I mean, they have some very interesting – I think it's more just they don't want to upset the guests because they have a lot of different – They had, for a time there, they had, like, they would put you up for free. They wouldn't, like, let you stay at the nice resort, but they would put you up somewhere for free if you tested positive. That was one of the sales pitches at one point or another. So it's crazy, really wild what people have come up with.
Here's the irony.
Yeah, to answer your question, Dean, Mexico, I think, is still the easiest one.
Okay.
And other than that, I don't know. It's complicated and it's different everywhere you go. But if you have your vaccine card, then they let you in. And that's really what it comes down to. And you know, the segregation of who's choosing to do that and who's not. And that's sad. I really don't, you know, I don't agree with it. I wish I had control over it.
You know, do you remember when there was so much fussing over late airplanes and there were lawsuits and they wanted to reimburse people? And if you stayed on the tarmac too long, you know, and they had all these surveys of which airlines were late. This is a huge consumer issue. That's not the point. The point is the fact that there were consumer groups that were advocating on behalf of airline, you know, passengers to help them out. And where are these same travel groups, travel rights groups, travel any groups that would advocate on behalf of travelers to get the cruise lines open up, get the airlines open up, stop their ridiculous mask mandates and that wonderfully filtered air? And also the fact that, you know, everybody's been exposed to COVID. Everybody on the planet at this point has probably been exposed to COVID unless you're in a really remote region. But everybody in the United States has been exposed. It's in the air. You can't help it. And so this idea that we have to do all these crazy things and all these ridiculous precautions, you know, at this point in time, 2 years later, doesn't make any sense. But back to the original point, are there groups representing travelers, be they airline passengers, cruise passengers? And I know they used to be. Where are they now? Why aren't they out there screaming?
You know, I really couldn't speak to where these groups stem from or where how they're created, but I think really, just politically speaking, like, I feel like everybody knows someone that knows someone that's died from COVID, and they shouldn't have. They died earlier than you would expect. They weren't necessarily in a high-risk group. So no one wants to be the face of that song, you know, because it's like, well, that's kind of too fresh, I think, and people don't want to be being heartless and being seen as that person. And also we don't know a lot, like, you know, we're still learning everything about this disease. And I know, that's how I feel. I don't like to act like an authority on something until I have had a lot of experience with it. So I feel like, for myself included, like, even though I'm a leader, I'm still, like, mounting the data and trying to filter through the crap. So I suspect many people are in that same position that care.
Yeah. All I know is that I broadcast and have stuck by this ever since March 2nd of 2020, you know, 2 weeks before the 15 days to slow the spread and 2 weeks before Laura Ingraham basically had the same story that Dr. Diderot in Marseille, France, you know, proved that chloroquine kills COVID. We knew it then. I've got a bunch of early articles in the February, March, April, you know, of 2020, that spring when this thing first hit, that said there is no pandemic. We have the cure. And this is before they discovered ivermectin, which came about 6 months, you know, well, maybe not that late, maybe 4 or 5 months later. But we all knew that this was a hoax from the beginning, not the virus, but the response to it, because we already had the cure. And, you know, I can share some articles saying there is no pandemic. There is no reason for this. In fact, I wrote a bill back in the end of February. I just discovered it because I'm going over all our bills. We have a fabulous new website. WriteYourLife.com is going to be totally redone. It's going to be gorgeous. Anyway, so I'm going over the bills and reformatting everything to get ready for that. And I found a bill that I wrote back in February of 2020 calling on Congress to look not just at vaccines, but cures and ways to kill viruses. So we were already broadcasting in February, you know, before anybody knew even much about this, that this is a complete, you know, misleading hoax, that Dr. Fascist is out there, and let's say you don't have to get political on this, but I do, but that this is, everybody's being misled. And so we knew, I knew, other sources knew, the sources I was reading from knew, Newsweek had an article. I mean, big, you know, international publications were saying, yeah, we got the cure. Most of those have been scrubbed from the internet. A lot of those have been taken down. I've still got them because I made copies and put them right on my computer disk. But there was a great deal of knowledge in early 2020 that we're doing everything wrong, that vaccines aren't the only way to go. And somehow big tech media, you know, got rid of those stories, twisted it around, demonized folks
right.
like Dr. Zelenko. They took out the information that people needed, the legitimate scientific questioning, the legitimate debate was erased, and it became, you know,
yeah.
vaccines are the only way. But we were already talking about this over a year and a half ago, almost 2 years ago, that this didn't have to be. And yet,
so
here we are still with these ridiculous mandates and things. Yeah.
The last time, so we've been listening to both sides of the story since the beginning, and
uh-huh.
we're very familiar with the hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin potential solutions. So naturally, when we went to Mexico last year, we got some of that just because, you know, it just made sense. You might as well. In fact, when Joel actually got the COVID last, I don't even know how long ago now, a long time ago,
mm-hmm.
They had treated him with hydroxychloroquine, and I don't know that that's what cured him, but he was okay, and that was great.
That's
that
what
was
cured
good.
Him.
But I will tell
it?
You, well, this is what I want to get the point, though, is that this last time we went to Mexico, just recently, mm-hmm. a couple weeks ago, you cannot buy it. It's not available in Mexico, at least in the areas that we were in, and we were in a really rural area. You can't buy hydroxychloroquine or ivermectin in Mexico anymore, at least in the port area that we were in, which was another, like, a telltale nerve, like, sign of, like, that's very, very concerning. And, of course, you know, my social media business and my experience in social media, it has been
mm-hmm.
extraordinarily revealing and absolutely true that they've censored the information. And that is so nerve-wracking to someone like me, because I can tell because I'm in social so often, and from what's being said and what the AI is picking up, I can tell what they are leading people to believe. And that's just the fact that there's someone leading someone else to believe something, it's so scary as an American, because that's really what, you know, the censorship at its best. And we're always
uh-huh.
being censored to some extent, but, like, it's never been like this in the States before. So, you know, and of course it takes pause when you do see any company that's supporting one side more than the other, just because that's the side, not, they're not allowing a healthy debate. And,
yeah.
but like I said before, it's also really concerning that most people, and I'm so shocked at this, are happy to have the censorship. They don't call it censorship. They say it's good that, you know, those talking heads can't just spread lies and confuse people. So, you know, unfortunately we get what we ask for, and, you know, that it is what most people don't mind, the fact that they tear things down from social. So
yeah, but
I mind,
unfortunately,
because I don't like
our rights aren't dependent on, you know, they're not dependent on the majority. This is the beauty of a republic. over a democracy. In a democracy, they could vote away your rights. They could vote away your free speech. They could vote away, you know, the ability to talk about things like hydroxychloroquine. They could just vote away the availability of them. If we had a majority rule, thank God we're a republic. So the nice thing about a republic is that the rights of the minority, the individual rights, are safeguarded by a constitution and by laws. And so even if the majority wanted everybody shut up, you couldn't do it. Because that would be against the, you know, and this is why the tyranny of the majority is one of the most dangerous things. This is why you never want a democracy. So the idea that most people may want censorship doesn't mean you're going to get it. In fact, freedom, in many cases, here's the dirty secret about freedom. Freedom has to be imposed. Most people would vote for slavery if given the choice. Most people would vote for bondage and being taken care of and live on a government plantation if given the choice. So for those of us that want to live free, we unfortunately have to drag along everybody else with us. And that's what a republic's all about, is imposing freedom so that those of us who want to live free can, and the benefits, you know, go to the people who would still vote slavery if they had the chance, but they're going to live free too. So we have to kind of drag them with us. Anyway, Josie's on the line right now, but that's fascinating. Now, I got one quick question for you, Shelby, before I bring on Josie. In Mexico, was hydroxychloroquine available before by prescription, or was it over the counter? And did the absence of hydroxychloroquine coincide by chance with a rise in the Pfizer vaccine in Mexico? Because that's what I'm guessing.
I would say, number one, it definitely was over the counter in Mexico prior to it was always over the counter in Mexico. They had it. But did it coincide with the rise? Yeah, I mean, it definitely coincides. I don't know if that's exactly the reason, but I would suspect there's something to it. So it was just recently. We just were there probably 3 weeks ago. And like I said, we were in a fairly rural port, and there was none to be had. And when you asked, it wasn't like we're out of it. It was just, no, we don't do that. Like, we're not allowed to do that, you know? And given that's not that. So it was very suspect, and it was sad. Again, it's like, wow, they're really, really, like, pushing so hard. And, you know, and then the FDA, I'm not a fan, never have been, really. I know it had good intentions in the beginning, but, you know, they've gone so far outside of their zone of actually helping, and they're just really in cahoots with Monsanto and all the pharmaceuticals now. But you know, they made an outrageous tweet that I just couldn't believe that was allowed, that it was enjoyed, that it was stayed. I mean, that was their tweet about "you're not a horse," and, you know, knowing that the ivermectin is definitely for human consumption as well, and has had a Nobel Peace Prize. For them to make a tweet that was sarcastic and so infantile and chastising to anyone that wanted to try it was shocking to me, like shocking, but not that shocking, just because I know that the FDA is not really on our side. Although no. I do believe it was. It was supposed to be, and it had the potential to be, but, you know, they got so infiltrated with Monsanto and pharmaceuticals that it's no longer about what's safe for us. It's about what they can get away with and then keep us in that loop of dependency on some sort of pills, drugs, whatever. Anyway, it was very sad to me to see, again, social sentiment was not it was not negative, like, for the most part, except for Joe Rogan, who definitely didn't like that. You know, really,
well,
social sentiment was like, the stupid people. And it's like, wow, I mean, the amount of misinformation that's just being spewed out in a sarcastic manner on a tweet from a governmental type of a agency, for someone in social media like myself, it's shocking and sad. It's just gotten to the point of it's all like almost like
Hey, let me hold you up here for a second. I got to get Josie on.
I'm
going to ask you the same question. You have to go now, you say, or what?
Yeah, I have to go. 8:40 is like my time. Otherwise, I got to get in the car, so it would be choppy. But I appreciate the time. Thank you so much. And I'm Shelby. You're fabulous. And let's travel again. Travelfund.biz for any of you single cruisers and single sailors and single trips people. Travelfund.biz. We can help you out.
Sounds good. Thanks, Shelby.
Bye-bye.
She started off as a poor child in Nicaragua, living under communism. And now she is a prosperous small businesswoman with a great family, living the dream as an American citizen. Josie Cossie knows all about both worlds, communism and freedom. She knows where your dreams can come alive and where they can die very quickly. And so her report is as much from experience as knowledge, and her passion and crusade are very real. With connections all over Central and South America, Josie brings you the world south of the U.S. border from personal experience, living, not just reporting, what's happening. And now, the Latina Report with Josie Coffey.
Yeah, Shelby had to go, which is too bad, but I wanted to have you in on that question. Is Pfizer dominating Mexico, and have they basically outlawed hydroxychloroquine so that people have no choice but to take, you know, the bioweapon shot and not be cured? Because, you know, and I told Shelby, hydroxychloroquine cures COVID with zinc. Hydroxychloroquine destroys the protein wall of the virus,
yes,
and the zinc kills the genetic material and prevents it from replicating. That's how it works. Everybody knows that. Who knows anything about virology? You know, that's 101 virology, and I know it. And I got it from Dr. Zelenko directly. But, yeah, is Pfizer messing around with countries like Mexico? What's going on?
I'm not sure about Mexico, but I know about Nicaragua. They're bringing vaccines from Cuba and from Russia. So what's happening in Nicaragua, so what's happening, thousands of Nicaraguans are going to Honduras to get the Pfizer vaccine. So they probably be better off with the Cuban or Russian vaccine instead of the Pfizer, to be honest with you. I really don't know, but because I don't think Cuba is killing their people like we are here with the vaccine, with the fake shot,
different?
I should say.
That's really interesting,
sure,
because the Chinese vaccine is the worst of all, because the Chinese communists don't give a damn. But the Cuban and Russians, they need their people to work to support their government. If they lose too many people, you know, they're different than the globalists here. They don't care because they want to kill freedom here. So they don't mind killing half the American population. So do you know anything that's different? Go ahead. What's the difference about their vaccine?
I'm not sure, because I was going back and forth emailing with one of the young girls that I communicate in Cuba, and she said, oh, we got our own vaccine. And this is last year she was telling me that when they were talking about the vaccine. She said, we're going to have our own vaccine. And now she said, everybody's getting their vaccine. But I haven't heard anything, her telling me that people are dying from the vaccine. So I'm thinking, Castro wants to control his people, and he doesn't want his people to die, you know, because many have fled the country. And the same thing in Venezuela. Everybody's mandated for the vaccine, too. And I was going to report today about Venezuela. 4 million have fled the country. So I'm sure he wants to still control the ones left. And more are fleeing right now, actually, to Peru. They're fleeing to Chile, Colombia. But hydroxychloroquine is over the...
These are the productive people that are fleeing. These are the people with you know, middle class, with money.
Doctors, lawyers,
yes.
But hydroxychloroquine is over the counter in the Latino countries. You don't have to have a prescription for that. Very, very inexpensive too. And in Costa Rica, you can. My friend was telling me last night how cheap it is, ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine in Costa Rica. You know.
Are they taking it? And what's the? I don't think the COVID. I've never heard anything about COVID in Costa Rica or any Central or South American country as being a big problem. Well, actually, no, that's not true. Some countries have. Brazil has a huge problem because they've got remdesivir hospitals and they're mandating the bioweapon vaccine.
Yeah.
But what are they doing? If hydroxychloroquine is available, are people taking it as a preventive, or are they taking it as a preventive for malaria, or are they taking as a preventive for any number of things?
Well, they know they can buy it if they want to, but in Peru, for example, you cannot buy hydroxychloroquine. It's illegal right now in Peru, because I have friends in Peru and I asked them. Because I think Peru is one of the countries in it with Bill Gates and our corrupt government with Fauci. So it's a mess.
Jean, if she can do a quick search and see if Pfizer is in Mexico and see if there's any correlation between hydroxychloroquine becoming illegal and Pfizer, you know, moving in. Because I know Pfizer bullies countries. You know, they have their doctors. Yeah, take a look if you can, please. That'd be good. And Jesse, if you want to look that up during the week, I'd be very curious. But Pfizer, I've read reports. I know Pfizer bullies other countries into taking their vaccine. I know they bullied our country.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's why you don't hear about Johnson as much, because Pfizer won the vaccine wars. You know, they bribed more, twisted arms, did more, you know, lobbying legislative stuff, and that's why the Pfizer one's being pushed here.
Okay, Greg. Yeah, it says the COVID-19 vaccine by Pfizer BioNTech will be the only one used in Mexico for at-risk children.
Oh, wow.
Okay, so that means it's in there, and that's scary.
Yeah.
Let's
look up the banning of hydroxychloroquine in Mexico, and I bet you the dates coincide. Betcha.
Probably.
If you've been quiet, too, feel free to join the conversation, too, Bianchi, if you have a point on this. But this is a great report. This is a great report today.
But while keep looking for it.
Keep going.
So the people in Venezuela, they're eating once a day because the food, the shortage of food is getting worse and worse and worse. I mean, I can't believe the United Nations has been called this country to be starving their own people now, you know. And there was a mom saying that they put the little kids to sleep most of the day so they don't think that they're hungry. So they don't know what to tell their kids. There's no food. So it's very,
are people growing
very...
gardens or are there local gardens at
no.
all?
No.
They can't do that?
Like, no. This guy that I saw talking, he had a coconut farm, and he said they ate a lot of coconuts. And they stole a lot of coconuts to survive. But now the criminals, there's a lot of criminals arriving from, like, cartel type from Colombia and mingling with the Venezuelan government. And they are taking over the farm. So they have taken over this old man's farm that he had since he was a young man. He must be, like, 70 years old. And so they have taken over his farm because they're threatening they're going to murder him. So things are very bad in Venezuela, and Maduro, the president, he's mandating the electricity shortage. So they cut the electricity for a few days a week. So what happens? A lot of people are dying in the hospitals connected to all these machines, you know, in the hospitals. So they're dying because of lack of electricity being on full time. And
Maduro, is he, how is he, you know, I'm sure he's living better than he's ever lived in his life. He's got billions of dollars and all that stuff. How is he being funded? How's the money getting to him from all the people? Any information on that?
No, but what happens, he's getting a lot of money from the Middle East because there's a lot of Muslims in there now. And also a lot of the cartels from Colombia, they're trafficking their drugs through Venezuela. And from Venezuela, all the drug comes in and it goes to Honduras. From Honduras, it comes here. So he's making a lot of money in opium from the Middle East and drugs from Colombia and coming over here. And also human trafficking, too. So this is a big deal.
So he's working with the cartel?
And he's not taking care of the electric grid in his country.
Right.
That's why he's telling everybody about the electricity that we cannot use it in full force because it's going to go bad. And it is going bad, the grid, the electromagnetic that they have. And all the huge corporations of oil in Venezuela are kind of abandoned. I mean, in big farms, big this. It's because they don't know how to manage these communist people, their oil. Because Venezuela was one of the richest country in the South American countries. You know, everybody was rich, and so what they have done is they have a lot of money that they took from all the oil, and they have it in Europe, European banks. So they took all the money, they froze the money from all the rich people because I know a rich family from Venezuela, actually a couple. And
So what they do is they took all their money, and they had a lot of money, these people. And what they do is every 3 months they're allowed to get $500 out of the bank, and they cannot see how much money they have. And
wow.
Most of the money is invested in the European countries. Yes. So it's and that's what Biden wants to do here now. They're telling the banks that they need to report how much money we have to the government. So it's coming. Let me tell you, Greg, the American people have had it so good for so many years.
Uh-huh.
And this is not about Biden. This is not about Obama or Trump. This has been well organized for 20-something, 30 years to bring communists to this country and to have a revolution. And first, and the radical left, Bill Gates, they brought the AIDS virus to wipe out half of the world and to control. So they've been working on this because that didn't work out. So they've been working on the coronavirus for a long time, this virus. How are we going to scare people like they did to the Jews? How are we going to get a hold of and control America? Because they cannot control us because of the weapons that we own. The Second Amendment, we have the right for that. But once the Second Amendment is gone, Greg, our country is going down completely like all the other countries in the world, because I lived through it. And if you don't have weapon, you don't have rights for nothing. And that's why the American people have to stand against these demons, against all of them, because they're all in it. And China is dictating on our country. And they don't have to use any weapons to attack us. They're using these people. They're paying them off. All these hospitals are being paid off. All these corporations are being paid off. Schools are being paid off. Big time, big money. In the remdesivir, remember you heard in the rally that we went, it was $2,300 per dosage that they're giving you to kill you in the hospitals. Now
mm-hmm.
I believe it's closer to $4,000, one of the nurses was telling me, from one of the hospitals. So the price
the money,
is going up and up.
The transferring of the money to the schools, I remember when Governor DeSantis was saying that he was cutting off money to school districts that had mask mandates against
uh-huh.
state law, and then
uh-huh.
and Brandon, you know, through his illegal Department of Education, was funding those schools anyway. You know, same thing's happening here. I've got a thing I post from a friend talking about, and I've heard this from a couple of different sources. You know, you've got a 20% bonus, you know, from the Center for Medicare, Medicaid funding for using remdesivir. So they're actually paying. And again, there's no consequence for death. You don't have to have a success rate. You don't have to have a good treatment, you know, to death ratio. You just have to be
yeah.
able to give certain things. So there's money coming from somewhere. I don't know if it's money from big government pharma, from the pharmaceutical companies themselves, through the government, but one of the key sources we need to look into, in fact, you know health people, ask them
yeah.
about the Center for Medicaid, Medicare Funding, CMS, Center for Medicare Systems, that's what it's called, Center for Medicare Systems. And it's how the doctors are all funded. It's how the hospitals are funded. In fact, that's how they're doing the mandates
uh-huh.
for the health professionals. Is they're telling the hospitals, well, you better get your folks vaccinated with this bioweapon, or they don't say bioweapon,
yeah.
I do, but they're not going to pay for anything.
To pay
in these hospitals,
yeah.
yeah. So that's where. Go ahead.
Medicaid and Medicare. I heard from one of the nurses, RN. Medicare is the big key here because they're being paid by the CDC, and the CDC, I believe, is getting the money from Bill Gates from China,
right.
and some of it is our tax dollars, so they're all mixed together. But they are telling the hospitals, because that's what one of the RNs in one of the hospitals, he's my friend, he says, yeah, we're doomed because the Medicaid, Medicare's mandate and their vaccine, and that's why the hospitals are complying. If not, we're not getting paid. We're not getting paid at all, and they have to get paid. So this is criminal. This is sad what we're experiencing in America, and we're allowing to let it happen. And one of my friends just got to the hospital, and his wife says, I do not want remdesivir or ventilators. And they wrote it in the charge. And the doctor bypassed it, and they started giving my friend remdesivir. So we just made a big stink about it, and they just they just took him off the remdesivir because what happens is they only have 6 patients at this hospital locally here, mm-hmm. and they're right. desperate for the money, see, because the housekeeping people, they tell me everything. I know a few friends in the housekeeping, well, so they go to all the rooms. Huh?
Housekeepers, hairstylists, bartenders, they know everything. You could run the world.
Oh, they know everything. Oh, yeah.
So yeah.
Hey, did she find out the
did she
find out the information that you told her to look it up?
Oh, Jean, let's find out. Let's get Jean back on here. Calling Jean, paging Jean.
Yeah, yeah.
Well,
hold on. I did not find any information on when Mexico banned hydroxychloroquine.
Yeah. Okay. Not surprised. I mean, I'm sure they did it quietly. But I'd like to be interested to know Mexico's version of Dr. Fascist, the genocidal, psychopathic vaccine drug pusher.
Oh, I'm sure they like him.
I do that for Joseph's benefit. Hey, I said that at the meeting last night. I was at our local convention of states meeting last night, and as soon as I said Dr. Fascist, everybody starts looking up. I said, you know what I mean, right? Oh, yeah, we know what you mean. I said, yeah, the genocidal psychopathic vaccine drug pusher. Everybody applauded. Everybody broke up. It was great. So everybody knows. I mean, remember we said at the rally? You know, so
uh-huh.
if people start
yeah.
using, language is power. You know, I met a teacher recently. We're going to do a thing on language because that's one of her specialties. But language is power. If everybody started saying Brandon administration, if everybody started saying, you know, Dr. Fascist, I got even Dr. Pry on Monday saying Dr. Fascist. I mean, it's hysterical. But the use of language can change everything. It is so important.
The thing is, we're not going to all be able to say Brandon because they're trying to make that, you know, a hate
illegal
speech. Yeah, if that's not a joke.
Well, good luck. You're not going to shut me down.
Yeah.
Brandon.
Yeah.
Brandon. So there.
I do need to get myself a Brandon shirt, though.
Oh, yeah. I should do a President Brandon, you know, reverse promo, complimenting him on all the things. You know, hey, President Brandon, thank you for raising the gas prices. Thank you for lowering our energy. Thank you for making this a worst place to live. President Brandon, you're our guy. What? Go ahead.
Since Biden is in another world, you know, with dementia, he probably don't even know what his name is. So he said, oh, okay, my name is Brandon.
I'm not convinced that he's as dumb as he pretends to be. First of all, I don't think anybody could be. But secondly, you know, they're talking about him running again, and here's the weird thing about Brandon. Brandon will get up and say what he feels, and then he'll be instructed to say something different. And it's really fascinating to watch. It's happened a couple times. The most recent one is when he said, well, we believe in the jury system. We honor the jury's decision with Kyle Rittenhouse.
Mm-hmm.
But then immediately came back later and said, well, we have to, you know, I've forgotten exactly how they changed the wording of the statement so that it's not as complimentary to the jury system. And, of course, now the lack of Justice Department is looking into that. Josie, let me let you see if you have another point here, and then I want to bring Paulette on.
I just wanted to say quickly, let's pray for the people in Australia, the people in Canada. A couple came to my store, and it is getting worse in Canada, let me tell you.
Mm-hmm.
This couple bought a one-way ticket, and they're freaking out because they don't want the vaccine, and I don't know what they're going to do. They said they're probably going to lose everything if they don't go back within 6 months. And you cannot do anything in Canada unless you are vaccinated, and they're going door to door to make sure you have the vaccine on. So it is sad. It's not there yet in this country, but we have our Second Amendment to be ready if anybody knocks on my door. And I made a decision with my husband. So
of course, I hope it doesn't get to that point. But here's the thing too: there's so much resistance out there now. You know, and the health professions alone are changing things dramatically. All right, let's bring on Paulette. I don't have your theme yet ready because we still are getting your title for the show. Let's bring on. And Paulette, you're on with our, I don't know what we're going to call this, foods that don't kill you for now. But we got Jesse, we got Gina.
Hola,
hola,
¿cómo estás?
Bien. I'm glad you're on.
Good. Hey, just out of curiosity, because I know you guys were talking about the vaccine, have y'all been hearing anything about the, is it the measles that they are pulling? I was hearing, a friend of mine was posting something the other day on, you know, Facebook, just saying that they're putting all this money into the vaccination of measles. Have you heard that?
Probably the
no.
Across Brandon's border. That's what happened last
year. Yeah. Hang on, let me see exactly what he says.
I don't know.
Yeah, it's really weird that they think that's going to be the next thing.
I've got some articles I've been looking into, and they're talking about smallpox. It's actually worse than measles.
Measles
is an infectious disease. It causes problems that can be fatal in extreme cases, but it's nowhere near as bad as smallpox. Smallpox is one of the worst diseases ever. There really isn't much natural immunity to it now because it pretty much was eradicated back in the 1800s. And, of course, the vaccine makers will claim that they're the ones that did it. But like polio, there's other reasons for these diseases going away. Polio was cured by chlorine in the swimming pools and better sewers because it's a fecal bacteria. So polio is a different kind of thing. Smallpox, we'd have to do some research on it. But what they're thinking, let's see if I can find the article. I've got it right here.
Yeah, because
smallpox,
even that they were pumping money into that vaccination, something like that. You know, this is really crazy, you guys, but I was watching, I took this very, very rare moment and actually watched a little Netflix the other day. I haven't sat in front of my TV in months. And for the first time, I said, I'm just going to kick back and watch a little TV. I know, it's a really weird thing. I wanted, like, some mindless activity. I like that serial killer show called One, okay? And And I don't know if you ever watched it, but, you know, I'm into that kind of, like, you know, narcissism, sociopath, all that kind of crud. So, because, you know, But in the third season, their lead character, you know, they're always preaching, right? You know, Netflix is always preaching, always indoctrinating people. So anyways, in this episode, their baby gets the measles, I think it is. And there's this whole thing where it's like, oh, how could they have gotten that? Everybody's vaccinated. But then they're like, oh, there was this one couple who didn't vaccinate their children, and that's how the baby got it, and the baby nearly dies. And then there's this whole thing about, like, oh, people who are anti-vaxxers, they just want to kill people, and it's so insensitive. And obviously, you know what they're talking about. I mean, it's so stupid. It's absolutely ridiculous. But anyways, I started watching it, and I was like, you got to be kidding me, you know? another thing, too, is the couple that doesn't vaccinate their kid against the measles or whatever, that's why I was thinking the measles. Anyways, they're like, well, our kids got measles, and they really didn't get a bad case, so we had no idea it could be so almost deadly to someone else's baby.
And you know,
let me just jump in here for a second, because I have an article here that, of course, I can't put on Facebook because it's true. Health Impact News, November 20th, 2,620 dead babies in VAERS after COVID shots, more fetal deaths in 11 months than the past 30 years following all vaccines as Scotland begins investigations. This is up there.
I saw that in Scotland. That is so crazy.
Well, no, that's what's happening. This is the next great unreported thing, is that, and they want babies within the first 6 months of life to be vaccinated, but babies are dying the day they get it. I mean, the greatest number of fatalities for infants is right when they're born, and they get that as soon as they die that day. You know, and because I remember seeing something else that there was a doctor in North Carolina that reported if you give a standard adult vaccine to a newborn, you know, it's like getting 30 vaccines to an adult. Which is insane.
Great, they're giving it to them the day they're born?
Well, I don't know if that's the day they're born, but I might have misspoke there, but they're giving it to them very, very early. And they want to have, like, 6 months. You know,
when my son got vaccinated, I think they did it before he left the hospital. I mean, that was 26 years ago.
Mm. Yeah, but those were different vaccines. They weren't obviously the COVID ones, but I think...
Yeah,
right.
Well, Gina, if you can look it up at what age they're giving this too, but this is a particularly, you know, bad story, but there are other stories too, that it's the babies. This idea that they want to give it to babies is insane, mm-hmm. you know, because they're going to die in the highest numbers. And the smallpox thing I've got here is this is from Natural News on November 18th. Mikey Adams is the editor. The smallpox bio war. Globalists prepare a perfect scheme to cover up vaccine deaths and cancel midterm elections by unleashing a new deadly epidemic. Now, I'm not convinced of this yet. I mean, Mike will tend to get out there, but that's the current thing they're thinking, is that if they release a new one, it's the Marburg, Ebola, or smallpox viruses, and what they're going to using that, the new epidemic, to cover up the deaths from the vaccine for the old epidemic. It's really scary.
Greg, yeah. that's what we heard on Truth and RTV, that they found that they're trying to release this other virus, smallpox, because since a lot of little kids, their parents are refusing the vaccine, they're going to make sure the little kids get contaminated now with that.
They
found that out. And you know, Paulette, all these
vaccines
movies,
of welfare recipients,
movies
I'm just
that
curious.
You see, yeah, all these movies yeah. that you see about Hunger Game, about trafficking and all that, all this is what exactly Hollywood is doing. And they make us believe that it's a movie, and they've been planning it years ago because they're in it.
Yes, I know. You're right.
Well,
you're
Hollywood
exactly right. Of course.
Hollywood always has films, you know, depicting the rights of the individual against the state, the individual takes, you know, wins over the tyranny, and yet Hollywood supports the tyranny, supports the state, you know, supports big tech, you know, supports censorship, supports suppressing the truth, and supports, you know, bioweapon vaccines over cures like hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin. So they are the state. They are the dictatorship, everybody as much as big tech and everything else. But did you hear about the 15 vials of smallpox that were found?
Oh, I heard about that. Yes.
Yeah. So I've got it in one of my – I've got too many articles here, but – oh, here we go. Here, I found it. This is from The Hill. And this was – you know, let me see. Cross out the subscription. I already got one. November 17th by Maureen Breslin, who says, a researcher at the Merck facility outside of Philadelphia found several vials that were labeled, quote, smallpox, according to a local TV station. The vials were found in a freezer on Monday night, and an alert was sent out to the Department of Homeland Security, reports WPVI. Oh, that's their station, WPVI. The news outlet noted that there were two Merck sites near Philadelphia. However, it said it cannot confirm where the vials were discovered. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the folks that brought you COVID, that's my addition, said in an email to The Hill that there is, quote, no indication that anyone has been exposed to the small number of frozen vials. Well, that's not the question, you idiots. The question is, what the hell are the frozen vials doing outside of CDC control anyway?
Exactly.
Yeah, the answer is not being asked. That's not journalism. That's not – anyway, so yeah. So smallpox – and there was the other – remember when we had John Cullen on several weeks ago? He was talking about the Spanish flu. That some researchers have actually gone up and dug up dead bodies from 1918, extracted their lung tissue with frozen, you know, Spanish flu virus, and brought that back to the lab. So these people are ghouls. These people are the modern-day Dr. Frankensteins, creating monsters out of long-dead viruses that they want to bring back for whatever reason. You know, it's the same people that gave nuclear secrets to the Russians and the Chinese so we'd all be equal, okay, the bomb. You know, it's the same people that say, well, we've got too many people in the world, let's kill them all. And we better kill them before global warming kills them. We'll do them a favor. You know, I mean, there's some really warped, sick, insane people out there. And these bioweapons types are some of the worst, Dr. Fascist being the epitome of, you know, genocidal, sociopathic, narcissistic, you know, mass murderer. I don't know what else to call it.
So by the way, two things. First of all, talking about movies, there is a very exciting, truthful movie that's supposed to be coming out in April of next year, and that's Jim Caviezel's The Passion 2. I don't know if you've heard about that, but I'm very excited about that. And, so that's going to be very exciting. And the second thing I was going to talk about, you know, countering Hollywood with its usual methods. But number two, I don't know if you guys have heard, but Thursday is actually Thanksgiving. And so I'm going to talk to you guys about what you can eat on Thanksgiving to help your brain. And so you can think clearly and see through the lies of media and politicians and all that good stuff.
Okay, Liz, let's actually get to your report. I'm really happy. We're going to segue now, folks. So
hold on, Greg. Greg, can I get in there a second?
Sure.
Yeah. Okay, just there. I don't see anything about the vaccine for children right now for infants, but Fauci said last week, according to The Hill, that he can't guarantee it. However, by spring, he doesn't doubt that there'd be the vaccine would be available for 6-month-olds to 5-year-olds.
Okay, yeah.
Wow.
So in other words, you want to make sure that everybody who doesn't need it gets it.
Right, right. So,
with a statistical risk of 0 from COVID for newborns up to age 18, you know, and even then, the risk above from like 18 to 25 is next to 0, like as close as you can get statistically. I hate words like that when I'm talking fast. Anyway, this man should be up on charges. The fact that the FDA is allowed to do this, you know, and you wonder where any government is. I personally think people are biding their time. I think they're praying for the midterm next year to stop this madness, and they're just hoping that not a whole lot of bad things happen in the meantime. The problem is a whole lot of bad things are happening in the meantime, so you need to resist now. Don't wait for the election, especially if they cheat.
Yeah.
And the election doesn't go as planned. So that's anyway, back to Paulette, the movies. Let's get to brain foods. So we don't want to be burn brains.
Yeah, so we don't want to be
on Thanksgiving.
Yeah, exactly. So, okay, so I will just tell you, I'm going to tell you a few things that I think you should be eating to help your brain for Thanksgiving, but the most important thing is probably not eating. don't eat yourself to death, like you said. So I think if you really want to help not gain a ton of weight on Thanksgiving, you should fast for 24 hours before you know that you're going to eat. So if you're going to grandma's house or your mom's house or your friend's house or to Denny's or wherever you go to eat on Thanksgiving, you should fast for 24 hours because that will make you – well, first of all, that does a variety of things. First of all, it's going to make you eat less portions because you're going to be way more stuffed if you fast than if you didn't fast. So
Hold on. This sounds counterintuitive. If I don't eat for 24 hours, I'm not going to be as hungry? Explain.
That's right, because your stomach – yes, that's exactly right. That's exactly right.
Okay.
Because you're, like, retraining your brain, right? And, yeah, it does sound – but, you know, the worst thing that could happen, and this is what everybody does, is they always have, like, a little snack in the morning to tie them over. And that's the worst thing on the planet that you can do. And the reason is that you're going to spike your insulin. And within an hour of spiking your insulin, you're all of a sudden going to crave more food. And then you're going to need more food and more food. The more you eat, the more you're going to need. That's why people get hungry. That's where hunger comes from. I mean, obviously,
yeah,
ultimately, if you don't eat, you're eventually going to get hungry. There's a natural hunger, and then there's the kind of hunger that is either your bad gut microbiome calling out to eat the bad foods, and it's also, kind of your insulin spiking and saying, whatever you do, give me some more food, give me some more food. So it's actually really fascinating. So first of all, you want to not eat for 24 hours. And if you can't do that, then make it 16. Don't eat for 16 hours. Try that one. That one will work. That'll work good too. So that's number one. It also, I don't know if you know, but if you fast for 24 hours, you will actually grow new brain stem cells. That's a fact. You will grow new brain stem cells. You'll also help the good gut microbiome, which is what you fight viruses on, but it also helps your brain function as well. So,
okay.
And it also helps you digest your food, et cetera. So fasting before Thanksgiving is a great idea. Now, in terms of what kind of meat to eat, well, we all eat turkey, or most people eat turkey. A lot of people, as an alternative, eat ham, but really the best meat would be to eat fish, because, at least for your brain. Omega-3s are absolutely by far the best. So, in other words, your salmon, your mackerel, your canned sardines, herring, tuna, that real high oil fatty fish. That's the best. That's the absolute best for you. But if you can't have that and you have turkey, well, turkey's not going to kill you. Turkey's actually really good for you, and it's by far the cheapest meat that you can eat. And it's I personally think it's better for you than chicken. And if you eat the dark meat and the skin, that's even better. You want to have the fat because the fat's good for you. Fat feeds your brain if you're in a ketogenic state, which is ideal. So the next thing I want to tell you guys is to, for dessert, try to eat some dark chocolate. Avoid the sugar. Eat the dark chocolate. Dark chocolate actually has cacao flavonoids, and those encourage neuron and blood vessel growth in parts of the brain involved with memory and learning. Actually, I'm going to tell you something. You want to hear something funny? I'm going to tell you about a I'm going to tell you about a study. It's actually hilarious. They say that they've done studies on snails, not humans, but snails, and they say that cacao flavonoids may actually reverse memory problems in snails. Now, I have to kind of wonder about this study because, I mean, like, how do you study a snail? Like, does the snail have, how do they figure out that it's got a memory problem? And,
well,
and then
all,
do they
the
feed
French
them, like,
study, or they would have eaten
little bitty
snails.
Tiny
That's,
chocolate
we know
bars?
That. Wait.
Do they?
Hold on a second. I was going to say, it's a good thing it wasn't a French study, or they would have eaten the snails. Secondly, how much money went into this? This sounds like a William Proxmire Golden Fleece Award, studying the memory of snails. What? I mean, think about that for a second. That's like, I mean, they spent like what, $5 million on the mating habits of Madagascar cockroaches, okay? Rather than step on them, like most people do. You know, when they're, you know, when they invade your home, they want to study that. Okay. So how much money went into this? I'm just, you know,
I don't know. I just can't get past, you know, an itsy bitsy tiny chocolate bar with 70% cacao, like how they decided that looked really tasty to the snails, and the snails were like, ooh, that
snails
looks good.
Snails don't eat chocolate,
you know?
As far as I know. I don't think they have the mouth parts for it. So,
how did they get the cacao flavonoids in there? I need to find more information about this study. We're going to have to talk more about this study because I am interested in reversing my memory problems.
What's a flavonoid? Yeah.
It's that good stuff. You know, that's supposed to be in wine and some fruits. And if you didn't get me driving in a vehicle, then I'd probably tell you more.
Okay, no, you don't have to
because
know
I would
answer.
Look
I'm
down
just,
at my proper
maybe,
notes.
Maybe Gene can look it up real quick.
I'm improper today. So tell Gene to look up exactly what the flavonoids are. But those are good things.
Yeah, no, I've heard that too. That's what I was wondering. And the other thing you mentioned too is canning fish. So canning in general, I've heard that that's actually not bad for food. That they especially with fruits and vegetables, they pick them at the most opportune, ripest, you know, perfection time, and so that's not a bad thing as opposed to having stuff, you know, ripen in your fruit bowl for a week because they want it to be transported. But canning fish doesn't really change the nutrition value of the fish much, or does it? Because people cook it anyway.
Canning fish is very different than fruits and vegetables because you actually take away. And fruits and vegetables in particular, just the process of canning usually involves high temperatures. High temperatures do take away the enzymes and the nutrients. It's not like they're awful, but fruits and vegetables that you find in a can. And most canned fruit have sugar added to it. Now, on the other hand, depending on the type of fish that you get, again, you want to go back to your source, but like the sardines, many of the sardines, especially to get really good sardines that are packed in that really good olive oil, those are a lot better. I mean, those are really, really good. And the thing is, they preserve for such a good time. And the heating process doesn't destroy them as much as it does, you know, the fruits and the vegetables. So.
Interesting.
Okay.
Well, I get my fruits and vegetables raw or fresh anyway, so that's not a problem. But fish, you know, if I'm going to eat Alaskan salmon and I don't have time to cook my own, you know, that's you know, the cans are, from what I've heard, a pretty good deal, except you don't want to get the salmon that's gone through Thailand. So this is one of the things, too. I don't know if you've heard about this, but the Alaskan caught salmon sometimes being sent to, thanks, I'll be right with you. This Alaskan caught salmon is being sent to Thailand for processing. It's a long way to send the fish. It's a long way to come back again just to save a few bucks on processing. So check your labels for salmon. You want Alaskan caught, you want it processed in the United States, you want it processed in Alaska. I bet you that's going to be a lot better for you.
Yes, and definitely avoid the Atlantic salmon out of all of them. But again, fresh is always best when it comes to that. But Gene, what you got?
Okay, so their benefits are their anti-inflammatory effects, and they protect the cells from oxidative damage that can lead to disease. And in one place it said that they're more yellow, but let me see. They're found in fruits, vegetables, grains, bark, roots, stems, flowers, tea, and wine.
Yes.
So flavonoids, mm-hmm. Flavonoids is one of the really good things, but it's that people think of dark chocolate as, well, it's sweet. Well, it's sweet because of the extra sugar, the cocoa in it, or cacao.
That's if they put sugar. Yeah, if they put sugar.
Yeah,
so you want to get one with a higher, at least 70%, cacao beans in it. Okay, now I got to tell you my next favorite food for Thanksgiving.
Okay.
And I can't, this is one that I've got to have on my table. And it's one of the best things you can eat for your brain. You ready?
Ready.
Eggs.
Yeah.
Deviled eggs, you know, deviled eggs. I think deviled eggs rock. I got to have deviled eggs. If I, you know, I could be a vegetarian, honestly. I could, because I love, you know, chocolate's vegetarian, berries are vegetarian, but I don't know that vegan is like, why would you not eat eggs? Eggs are like one of the most nutritious things you can eat. They have B6, B12, folic acid. These are one of the best things on the planet for your brain. It actually prevents brain shrinkage and delay in cognitive decline. So you should eat a lot of eggs every day.
You know, this is one of those foods. This is why this is going to be good. We're going to have more and more folks talking about nutrition. But what's fascinating is the things that we were told were good for us, you know, and the things that we were told were not good for us, particularly things like, you know, steak, red meat, which is, I still think that's a moderation kind of thing. But eggs especially, cholesterol was thought of as a bad thing. And I remember back in high school learning about sterols. Sterols are fats, all right? And every cell in your body has sterol in the linings of your cell walls. Without sterol or cholesterol, your body would collapse. You'd be dead. Okay, so it's not a bad thing, right? But cholesterol, they're finding it's nowhere near as bad as originally thought. And eggs, which were demonized for a long time, people were eating egg whites and other stupid things, eggs are really good for you.
That's exactly
right.
In fact, I'll tell you something. The American Heart Association has actually gone back on what they said because they know this is a fact, that dietary cholesterol absolutely does not affect your cholesterol, does not raise your cholesterol. They've actually gone back and reversed what they said because they found out that was absolutely not true.
So how is the,
you know,
so, again, so when they measure cholesterol in your body and they recommend not eating a high cholesterol diet, those still, are you saying those don't have a connection then? Your body makes cholesterol?
No, not anymore. They're not saying that yet. So the only people saying that are not people that aren't keeping up with the science. And people are still saying that. In fact, there are still people that are saying low-fat diets work. And, you know, I mean, it works for some things, but it's not the most nutritious, healthiest way to lose weight. But that's what low-fat diets are still, I mean, I still, as long as I live, I'll never understand people that are like, I want the egg whites instead of the eggs, and, you know, I'm going to eat a lot of bread and whatever. I mean, it's just like, where are we? I have no idea.
Sugar
our body
and inflammation.
Functions best
that's the problem, right?
Yeah.
Sugar and inflammation?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, Lord have mercy. Lord have mercy. Oh, and just to tell you, I am still a devout believer that coffee is excellent for your brain.
Okay.
Berries, avocados, nuts, all that stuff is good for you. I would just avoid the, don't eat the roll, don't eat the mashed potatoes, eat mashed turnips instead. Those are delicious. Mm-hmm. Eat as much green as you possibly can.
I'm sorry, I interrupted you. What was that last bit?
That's okay.
No, beans, you said,
and
what was the last thing is, let's do the list again, because I have a question for you on a bread-free
berries.
Diet.
I said, yeah.
Berries.
Berries.
That was what I meant.
If you eat berries, blackberries, blueberries, raspberries are the best. Coffee, I'm coffee. I'm a devout fan of coffee. And avocados and nuts.
Yeah, you're talking about my diet. Well, I drink a lot of tea, lots of salmon, lots of walnuts because they're brain food, lots of avocados.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, those are the byproduct of growing hair. So I need to get a haircut like every 6 weeks, something ridiculous. So all the things help your brain are also great for hair,
I'm
too.
Jealous.
So if you see people walking around with a great head of hair, chances are they're eating my salmon diet. I got Chance in the line. Chance, I'm going to get to you in just a second here, and you can join Paulette's report. But bread, is there any reason to have bread or baked bread goods in your diet? Can we get along perfectly well without them? Paulette?
I thought you said, when you said bread, I thought you said Brett. And I was like, is there somebody on the line named Brett? No, I can't think of
not
anything
that I know of yet.
That
Brett,
is good about them
in,
other than their
B-R-E-A-D.
Soul food.
Yeah.
I mean, other than like alcohol and other drugs, they seem to, I don't want to say satisfy. I would say they help, keep you away from your problems, fantasizing about something else. And what are they? Distraction. They're like a distraction or just kind of me watching Netflix. It was like a waste of my time. It made me dumber. It, it kept me away from more important things that I could be doing, And so if you want to eat bread, it would be the same thing. It's going to make you feel worse, make you dumber. Steal your time, steal your body, steal your energy. It's an anti-nutrient. So I can't think of any reason other than, you just really like it, just like destroy your health. But, we do have our little comforts that we like.
Is there conditioning? Because, you need bread to make a sandwich. Bread is life. You need, and that would go with your wheat cereals in the morning. I mean, Kellogg's has convinced everybody
you can make a really good keto bread with almond flour and, coconut flour, just alternative other than to the gluten that's in there. We don't make bread or we don't make flour the way that we used to. Most flour is actually bleached. They put chemicals in it, but even the land and the way that we actually create the products are completely different than the way we used to 100 years ago.
Yeah.
We really abuse our farming, way that we
do it.
Yeah,
I gave up bread, I gave up wheat products, I gave up all that stuff, and I felt wonderful. It's all part of my, my program here. So I'm doing the fasting thing. I'm not, going 24 hours without eating. That'd be a bit much, but I certainly do anywhere from 12 to 15, depending on what time I stopped eating the day before. I want to get Chansey in on this. Chansey joined us yesterday for the first time. Already has a report because we had so much fun for a couple hours yesterday morning. Chansey, do you eat bread? What do you think? And then we'll let you get started here in a bit.
No, yeah, good morning. I eat bread, and it is intentional. So if I seek out a loaf of bread, it's going to be probably a $9 or $10 loaf of bread that's Ezekiel grain. They farm the land the right way, and it's for a treat. It's for that sandwich that I want to eat, or it's for if I want a bacon, egg, and cheese in the morning. It's not every day. It's not, what am I going to do today that has bread in it? And then when it comes to Thanksgiving, it's the same way, making a good loaf of sourdough with non-bleached flour, with red mill flour or something like that, that someone that wanted to enjoy that satiation of taste for the holiday, to try to teach them that they don't have to eat Sunbeam bread. They can, take it to the next level and just, it's kind of like where we're headed into the wine thing, or into the essential oil thing or into all that. It really does matter how much, where you get it and who made it. Yeah. So same thing with eggs.
And she brought up Ezekiel bread. That's a great bread that actually is sprouted. And let me just tell you a little note about sprouted, because that's excellent. So a friend of mine, a couple of years ago, she had pecan trees, and she picked all these pecans and, took all this time, and then she rinsed them, because she was like, I want to rinse them because they were dirty. If you rinse something and put it in a bag, after a few days, you know what's going to happen, right? It's going to be covered in mold.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the funny thing is, to actually soak your nuts, however, that sounds funny, doesn't it? Now my naughty to nice is coming out.
That's
but if you soak your nuts in filtered water, that's actually the best way to bring out the nutrients and the enzymes. And that's exactly what they do when they call it sprouting. So you rinse them. However, you do have to dehydrate them afterwards in order to get the full benefit, because otherwise they will grow mold. But that's exactly what they do to sprout their grains, which is excellent. That is the best, most nutritious way to eat those types of grains. And like you said, you know, in the way that you are using those grains, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. That's, you know, that's excellent. You know, just, you know, you always have to be aware of, like, why am I going to consume a product? You know, am I trying to nourish my body? Mm-hmm. Am I trying to nourish my soul? Am I trying to help my brain? Am I trying to feel better, have energy, or am I just trying to feel good or, you know, or eat something that, you know, is delicious? So hopefully you can do all at the same time. But again, you have to become aware of what you are doing and why you're doing it when it comes to food.
Yes. So, that's where I'm at.
Let's break for a second here because I want to bring just introduce Chansey again. So what usually happens is I'll bring a reporter on to talk about whatever's going on with the previous reporter stuff. That way you guys get to chat with each other. And anybody's welcome to join the conversation. Pianki left us, but we've still got Josie here. We've got Paulette, who's immediately on before Chansey. Gina, producer, of course, is here. And I am on the cell phone because something screwed up with me this morning and I couldn't use my mic. So, you know, I'm on plan B.
Uh-oh.
So let's give a quick round of applause
here
for our new reporter. There you go. I think Paulette had a comment.
I was just going to say, I hate to cut you guys off, but I'm going to have to. I'm actually very, very busy with the season, and it's a crazy week for me. Thank you so much for having me on today. And actually, anybody who wants to come watch me tonight, I would love to talk more about Thanksgiving. I'm making a buffalo turkey tonight, which is like a, you know, like a buffalo wing. It's going to be a buffalo turkey tonight. And that's going to be on Twitch at 7 p.m. Central. That's www.twitch.com/naughty2nice. Naughty to Nice. So, and that's on Twitch. So I hope you guys will check me out. And I thank you so much for having me on the show. And, man, I love to talk about this. And hope you guys have an amazing day and a wonderful Thanksgiving.
Thanks, Paulette.
Happy Thanksgiving, Kisa.
Thank you. You too.
We'll talk to you next week.
You're welcome. Thanks, guys.
All right.
God bless.
That's Paulette Martin. And so we have an interesting lineup today. We've got the incredible reporters. We start the show with Gene, and then Shelby, and then Josie, then Paulette, then Chansey. I think this is the only show where we have five reporters, you know, on one day. And so this is kind of cool. So our newest person, Chansey, who joined us yesterday for an hour of what citizen legislation is all about, then an hour of what she's all about with wellness. I said, you know, we got to get you on regularly. So let's see what you got. Pick a topic and, you know, let's get our wellness, you know, knowledge started here. And what you got for us today? Good morning.
Well, that's exactly where I was headed, was how to bring wine, weed, and wellness into Thanksgiving. Because we usually, just like we've been talking about, we're all stressed out. What do I cook? What do I bring? What do I take? Who am I going to see? Who's going to be there? Who's going to cuss me out? Who's going to talk about politics? And I don't want to talk about that. So it becomes sometimes not the best scenario when you're meeting with family or you're avoiding family or you don't know who's going to be there after a few days. So I just love to let people know that you can continue to be yourself. So if you're on this wellness journey and you've been doing all the things and you've been eating correctly, you don't have to worry about going to a family's house and having to force yourself to eat something that Aunt Margaret bought that is full of margarine and that has, you know, genetically modified ingredients in it. You can make an amazing dish yourself, take it, and feel confident that you've done something for yourself. And if they are, not accepting of it, you can kind of just brush it off with a nice glass of wine and maybe a tincture that helps you get back into your body and tell yourself that you're doing this for yourself and nobody else. So
yeah, that's a huge point. There's so much pressure. You don't want to offend, you know, grandma, you know, by not having her margarine-based, you know, stuffing. And margarine's like plastic.
Yeah.
Isn't it like one molecule away from plastic? And that's one of, that's an oil company product, oleo margarine. Tell us about margarine, because I understand, I haven't thought about it for a while, but that's one of the most dangerous things out there, isn't it? Because it's not even really food. It's like plastic.
No.
What is margarine?
Well, you're going to, yeah, you just asked me a question that I have no idea. I just know that I don't eat it. So I just eat grass-fed butter and all that. But margarine in itself used to be okay, and that's why they thought, like, they've been programmed to continue to cook with it. So in their head, it's, you know, Betty Crocker or whatever, and I'm just using what I've always used, but they've slowly changed it just like they've changed cigarettes, just like they've changed wine, just like they've changed weed. So that's what they do is this the generation that we've supposed to been looking up to cook our food and to be healthy, they used to live off the land. And so they just continue using the land, and it's been destroyed underneath their feet. So they haven't had the training or the, hey, let's swap this out and let me show you what other choices you can make. But yes, it's basically once it gets in your gut, stays there for years and turns into plastic. It's plaque. It just eats. It just stays. Yeah. So.
Yeah, I hated that stuff for years. Of course, I was given it. That was just like the family thing, you know. Mom gave you margarine. See? I was like, you know what? Yeah. Nah, I don't think so. I just went to butter. But it's not that, you know, I'm gonna look it up right now myself. I'm just kind of curious. But yeah. Let's see what this stuff is.
Well, it has a longer shelf life. So, you know, butter does too, though, because people start thinking it's like, oh, it's going to go bad. Well, it usually doesn't. You can even leave butter sitting out if you do it right. But margarine just, you know, it's cheaper. It's more affordable. And that's what they needed. They went through times in their life to where things were not affordable. So you just buy a big tub of margarine and it lasts forever. So again, it's just that conditioning.
I'm just rereading some articles here. Fact or fiction, margarine is one molecule away from plastic. Apparently that's making the deal.
Yeah, that's me. That's what I kept thinking, that it was one molecule away from plastic.
Well, it's got its own category online. I mean, I don't have time to read all the articles right now, but it says margarine is but one molecule away from plastic and shares 27 ingredients with paint. This is from culinarylore.com. This is a great margarine. One molecule
away from plastic.
It says since 2003, the compilation of facts about margarine has been circulating on the internet, probably starting from one of a number of email chains. Let's see if we find it. Well, we're gonna have to look this up. But apparently, it doesn't. Margarine. Here's another one. Margarine was originally manufactured to fatten turkeys. When it killed the turkey, the people who had put all the money into the research wanted a payback, so they put it in their heads together to figure out what to do with this product to get their money back. Nope, not even remotely true. Yeah, so we're going to have to look into this a bit more. So this might be one of those urban legends. But we know it's not good for you because it has oleo, and I forgot what oleo is, but I know that's not good. Besides, it's not natural, so why have it anyway? We've got butter. I wonder about the butter side. There's a butter Facebook page. I used to look at them all the time. So feel free, carry on, Chancy. Let me see what I can find while we're going along here. I'll get my butter is better page.
Yeah, no, and then we could go down 10 rabbit holes, but butter, of course, you don't want just butter because it's the same concept. The cows have been pumped full of antibiotics. They've been given steroids, so you're not even getting real dairy. So you look for grass-fed, grass-finished, and there's probably only two or three of those brands around, and then you still have to wonder if they're doing it right. So you would avoid cooking you would only cook with grass-fed butter, and it would be, you can name some brands like Kerrygold, and then they had a thing a while back when you Google Kerrygold that they weren't finishing their cows off with grass. They were giving them grain at the end. So you could never be 100% sure. So you want to cook with ghee and or coconut oil if you're going to do that, but grass-fed butter would be, you know, in there. You just don't swap margarine immediately for.
Wait a minute. So what is finishing exactly? You're talking about that. So they're fed, and is it finishing the last thing they get for some before they're killed for meat or something, or what?
Right. So. Finish is better when you're looking at like a steak or something, because that means that's before they were taken to butcher. And then grass fed, you can get away with if it's a butter or a milk product. But you know, you're not allowed to buy raw milk. So you have to buy the pet raw milk and feed it to your pet, which happens to be you. So, in order to get it. Yeah. Cause they don't want you to have the colostrum of a cow's milk. Is very good if grass-fed, And the grass is not sprayed with glyphosate. So you can go again. You can just go keep step. But it is good for the microbiome. So it's a good coating for the gut. So kids who can't do dairy, they're taken off of dairy and they're put on formula. And then the formula is full of soy, which is an estrogen mimicker. So you just go down this whole, like, it starts from birth. But it's not the dairy that they're allergic to. It's what's in the dairy, because these cows are not even cows anymore. They're genetically modified people, things, animals.
Huh.
Yeah. So that was probably weird. Way too much for a sentence.
I'm just sort of taking this on. Well, the question then becomes, you know, where? How can you eat healthy? How can you get, you know, natural stuff? And I'm going to start frequenting
exactly.
my farmer's market. And some other places, but you know, the more natural, the more closer to nature you get, the better. Most of, I mean, there's very few processed. I think the most processed food I eat is like cheese and yogurt, and even that's, you know. And I'm trying to, I've got to get more of the organic, just because I don't want all the antibiotics and things like that in there. But
Go ahead. What I try to teach people is that if you start this cycle, which is where I did, you know, and I'm 103 pounds and I lost 6 pounds because I was like, well, I just want to eat. You know, if you're going to screw me over that bad, I'll just do smoothies and juices and I'll take control. Well, that's not healthy either. So our bodies are fearfully and wonderfully made and they can heal. So you just make better choices. You can't control everything. So you be sure that you put the good stuff in, like CBD or good flavonoids. Like if you're going to have something that you're not too sure about, make sure that your vitamin D is high. Make sure that your zinc is high. Make sure that you can digest those foods and you'll be okay, because that's what your bodies are made for. But if you have dis-ease in the body, you don't want to add on things that your body's having to fight. And it goes back to the egg thing. I love that, because an egg is the most important thing that you can eat, and it's also the most dangerous thing you can eat, because if it's been that when they are sold in the stores, they bleach the shell before they put it in a container because of the fecal matter that's on it from the chicken, because you have to do sanitation. So even the brown ones that you buy in the store, they've been bleached. Mm-hmm. So that breaks down the coating of the egg. So, yes, the farm-raised free-range eggs are going to be better than the white ones, but you kind of want to try to find a farmer who knows his stuff and get eggs from him.
Right.
So it's like we're having to go back to basics, and nobody wants to do that because it's so complicated. So that's why I'm trying to help people just, well, do your best, and then here's some things you can add in when you're making a decision.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's one.
But going back,
you know, free range, how much does that have in a difference? My thing I look for is no antibiotics, you know, the dairy products, no GBH, no organic where possible. Like I don't buy milk ever. I just have like half and half for my tea, and it's always organic unless I can't find any for some reason. But yeah, so it's hard to do everything, but you can certainly do a lot. And I think did Jean, do you want to get on this? Or I heard someone else.
Can I ask something?
Josie, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. I was just wondering, what do Hollywood and the radical left, that they're poisoning our food, what do they eat? I guarantee you they're not eating the same food we're eating, you know?
No. And then you can even take it even deeper, and they have people, I mean, that, you know, that cook their food, that do what they're supposed to do, that make sure that their body is performing and that they know what to put in it, and or, you know, they just eat the crap and then they have surgery and then they don't tell anybody. So you know, oh, I'm healthy and fit and look at me. And then, you know, you don't see them for a while and they've had their gallbladder taken out, or, you know, they've had gastric bypass or something that they don't want anybody to know about. And it's because they've been eating so unhealthy for so long. What?
Dare I say liposuction?
Yeah. Yeah. And you look at these people like Betty, oh gosh, just lost her name, Golden Girls. She's turning 100, I think, or 99.
Betty White.
Yeah. Betty White.
Yeah, Betty White. So, I mean, she's an alien. Like, I'm just kidding, but how could she live that long? You know, it's one of those things where it's just so exciting. It's crazy to see these people that live forever, like in the entertainment industry, when their bodies have been taxed over and over with travel and no sleep and, you know, alcohol and drugs. And, yeah, so they've got somebody keeping them alive. And, God, you know, it's all part of it. But that's funny.
Hey, since you were talking about cows, I just purchased 2 cows at the auction here at the fair a few weeks ago, you know. So the cows went to the slaughter, there's the meat in Mississippi for us. So we got 2 cows. So we have to buy a huge fridge, a freeze for one of So those
are they grass-fed by chance or grain-fed?
They're grain. I think they're like from a regular farmer here, and I guess they give them regular corn and stuff like that, you know. So one is supposed to be Angus, and the other one is not. So something like that. So.
Well, you're definitely better off than you would be going to a store, you know. So it's definitely a step above buying it at Walmart or buying it at, you know, at a grocery store, because you'll be able to, you'll be able to take care of that yourself. So
I think a lot of the beef now in America, somebody was saying 50% is coming from China. So you know what they're doing to our meat. They're injecting it. So that's where we're at with the beef and pork.
Wouldn't that have to be on the product label? Because, like, we're talking about salmon, Alaskan salmon's being sent to Thailand for processing because it's cheaper. But it's on the label, you know, product of Thailand. So any beef that comes from China, even if it's, you know, allegedly American beef, wouldn't that have to be on a label somewhere? Or are they getting exempt somehow? Chance, do you know about that?
I don't think they're going to put it on. No,
but they have to.
I think
as far as labeling,
the only thing that I don't know, and I want to find out, if it's processed here, say that beef is like sent from China to the U.S. or something, does it have to say China? But I don't know, because I haven't bought meat in a grocery store in 4 years. I mean, I don't even look at the labels anymore. But
where'd you get it from?
I get Butcher Box.
Where'd you
go? Butcher Box. Meat delivery. It's a meat delivery thing, membership that you do, and he created the company because his wife couldn't get pregnant, and it was from all the hormones she was eating in meat. So he started his own grass-finished meat company, and you can get, I get 6, huh?
What's the company name, and who's the person? Let's give him a plug.
Butcher Box,
Butcher Box.
Yeah, and if anybody wants to, you know, not to whatever, but shameless plug. It doesn't do me any good, but like I have a code and all the things. But I mean, it has saved our lives. During COVID, when all the meat and all the stuff was out, we didn't even think twice. I mean, we had steaks, we had chicken, we had pork, we had salmon. They do everything. And it's all, you know, it's like a company that you can trust. And again, any company can be corrupt, but I'm just letting them have it. You know, I'm trying to, you know, you trust them and you just go forward with it. And I've done the research and they even had turkeys. Like if you ordered soon enough, you could get a turkey and all that. So we get free bacon for life. I eat bacon.
How do they get it?
Pretty cool.
Shipped? Is it a local retailer?
Yeah, Shipped and Dry.
I'll get them on the shelf.
Yeah, it's that would be really good if you could, for sure. It's Shipped and Dry Ice, and it comes from, I can look it up. I don't really know. Just been doing it for so long, it just keeps coming. So. But yeah, it's $129, I think, for like 6, but it's a lot of meat. Yeah.
So you get like a package deal. You just buy so much meat, put it in the freezer and,
You get to go through.
Okay.
I'll send it to you. I'll send you the link and then you can put it in the show notes.
Yeah. Well, if you want to call, if you're a fan, you know, the company, give them a call. See if they'll come on your segment. I mean, why not?
Yeah.
Up to you.
Sure. They're involved. Their mailing address is Boston, Massachusetts. And then I don't know. I think they do the same. It's kind of the same thing with the wine. They get it from farmers who are doing what they're doing. And then, it's free-range organic chicken, humanely raised pork, grass-fed, grass-finished beef, and wild-caught seafood. And then you just choose your plan, and then you let it come to your house. And it's cut up. And They have a huge, I mean, it's amazing because they have a whole page for recipes. So if you just get, like, beef, you can go on their recipe page and ask, and then there's people on there and they cook with clean stuff. They tell you you don't need much seasoning. They tell you the temperature of the steak matters, you know, all that. So that's where I learn a lot of my stuff about food.
Well, obviously I have to get them on. See, I want to do a lot more with this kind of stuff because, you know, as we move to more, you know, natural stuff and get away from store-bought stuff, especially, you know, what really started this was the whole COVID thing. I mean, I was eating pretty healthy anyway, and now I'm really, you know, reducing the weight, doing more exercise and doing some things. But I think we really need, you know, overall sense to protect ourselves, you know, from our own government, from our own pharmaceutical industries, from our own agriculture industries, from all the GMOs that are out there. And soy, especially for men, is horrible. I mean, the last thing I want is synthetic or mimicking estrogen, please. You know.
Yes. And that goes, I mean, this is off the food subject, but it's all these chemical products that you're putting on your body. And these little kids are given Bath and Body Works and Axe spray and, you know, all the things when they're young, and it's ruining mm-hmm. their bodies. It's destroying their mm-hmm. natural pheromones. Like, there's even studies we can go into that, like, if you're on birth control or if you lather yourself with all that, you attract a different mate because your pheromones are not yours. And then you get married and then you get off of birth control to have a baby and you're like, whoa, wait a minute. That's not who I married. Well, no, it's not.
Wait a minute. This is huge. this is,
I know.
You've just opened up a big can of worms.
Oh,
we're going to explore this. Because pheromones, yeah, it's interesting when, you know, you look at someone that you're attracted to, they have to smell right. I know that sounds kind of crazy, but they do. And if you're talking about artificial, this can be manipulated too. I wonder if dating services are manipulating products to get people together. And, you know, this is where my mind goes, right? But think about that. If you marry someone that's wearing a certain scent or product and all of a sudden they change that product, you're just saying because of birth control, they can't be on it, and all of a sudden they smell different.
Yep.
It is like a different person, isn't it?
It is. And then you're both questioning, like you both start arguing and fighting and stuff, and you don't even know why you're doing it because they don't teach that. They don't say, hey, that's fine that you're going to do this, but when you get married, you need to know, or when you start dating someone, you need to know that X, Y, Z. But they don't want you to do that because they want divorce rates to go up. They want children parentless. They want you to be in chaos. They want you to be on antidepressants. They want you to be on sex drugs because you can't perform. Like that's their goal, and that's where we're headed. That's where it's food, it's wellness, it's everything. It's in all of it.
Who's they? Let's get the they identified so we know who.
They, yeah, big pharma. You know, big pharma because they own all of the prescription drugs, and then further into the medical industry of insurance will cover this, insurance will cover that. So let's put them on this so that they have to see a psychiatrist or they have to see a counselor that a insurance company covers. I don't know how many clients tell me, I can't even tell my counselor this. I can't even tell my psychiatrist this. And it's because if they tell their psychiatrist or counselor something that they want to do natural, they turn them off. No, sorry, insurance doesn't cover that. So they want you dependent on them. Insurance, big pharma, big tech. They want you to scroll through your Instagram and see these beautiful girls putting on these beautiful lotions that are full of synthetic junk. And you've got to do that too, because that's what it'll help you do.
We have about 5 minutes left. Anybody else want to get into this?
Josie? I didn't talk about it.
Oh, hey, listen, the first thing I learned about Action Radio is that trying to stick to a topic just doesn't work. Don't even worry about it. We just go where we go. And the little things you think are throwaway comments, all of a sudden one of us will latch onto and go, wait a minute. I want to focus. I'm trying to remember this dating thing because I find this fascinating, the whole idea of pheromones, that you're sending off chemical information to, you know, prospective people to be attracted to, and that the products are actually changing the pheromones that you send off.
And it goes for friends too, you know, like if you work with a bunch of people and, you know, you don't understand why you don't like Sally, she's always, you know, weird and she's mean to you or something, like it could be that, but you can't fix all that. But I can tell you one thing, me wearing essential oils all the time and for doing it for like 8 years now, I have random people come up to me at the grocery store and talk to me. I have random people come up, you know, oh, you smell so good, and that starts a nice conversation. Natural scent is what we're supposed to put off, and you can encourage that with frequencies from essential oils to do that. But going back to help people
out. So I can be like a chick magnet if I have my natural pheromones, you know, getting out there more. What do you think?
Absolutely. I have helped. I mean, I can't even, it's that simple.
Okay,
it's,
we got to talk.
I know. And it's all about your energy and how you look and feel. And again, putting good things in your body, you know, that emits out. But unfortunately, it is. It's all about scent. Scent is huge. Our limbic system makes decision. And so I have a whole class on circumcision and the limbic system. And so, yeah, we can go down as many holes as you want.
And you know, Greg, bees are smarter than us, because if you put perfume or deodorant or any type of like that and you come closer to the bees, because I do the photography when we're extracting the honey, you know, they will come and sting you. So on that day, I cannot put nothing at all. So it's kind of cool that the animals are created so perfect by God, you know. And it's just cool. Yes. I was thinking about the bees.
Yeah, there's a funny story about that. Lemongrass is used to move bees from hive to hive. It's a happy thing for them. And I didn't know that. And I was using lemongrass as the opener. And so everywhere I went, I had bees on my car. Like, I would get out, and they would be on my door. And I was running from them. You know, I thought, I was like, they're going to sting me, you know. So I started looking into it, and I don't know who told me. Some older lady told me that. She's like, well, do you have any lemongrass? And I was like, actually, yes, I use it because it's good for your liver. And she was like, well, they're loving you. She said, they just want to be around you. And so now everywhere I go, it doesn't matter. Essential oils with that natural scent coming out, there'll be a bee around me. And my friends see it all the time. They're like, you're the bee with me. I was like, well, I don't like it. Because they're going to sting me. But I know they're not going to. But it's just that natural scent. They're looking for that flower. They're looking for that frequency.
Okay, I want to try an experiment. I want to try some essential oils for macho guys like myself here, and just see what happens when I go out. We're going to do an experiment here. I'm going to report on this. You guys are going to die. Now, I talk to a lot of people anyway, just because I'm ridiculously friendly and outgoing, but I am really curious now just because I'm a guy and because I'm really curious now. Josie's probably laughing her butt off.
You'll never see.
Yeah. Macho man.
It is. Macho man. I'll make you a rollerball and we'll call it Macho Man. So Macho Man Greg.
Please do it.
Yes, Action Radio is essential oils for men. Men who want to be manly men. Yes. Men who want to be chick-maggots. Men who want to go in society and meet people and influence friends, or meet friends and influence people.
Yes.
See what you brought out of me now? This is great.
I know, man. I love it. That's what I do.
Well, you got 2 minutes. 1 minute you got.
Yeah, 1 minute.
Well,
yeah. So,
Jesse,
give your information. Let's get your contact information.
Okay, so find me at chancyterry.com, chancyterry, chancyterry.com. And then on there, you can find me on Instagram, Facebook. I have my wine on there, organic wine for the holidays. You probably can't get it by now, but next holiday, Christmas is coming. You can find me on all that, and I'll be able to talk to you about all that. This is what I do.
Sounds good. All right, I forgot to play our spot for our webmaster, so I'm going to do that, let all you guys go, and we'll see you all tomorrow. I'll make a quick closing announcement, but here we go.
This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with a personal recommendation and testimonial for Eric Colley, our new webmaster and marketing guru. Eric has been invaluable in upgrading our website, writeyourlaws.com. To help you with your marketing, Eric Colley offers proven, cost-effective strategies to help small businesses, startups, and nonprofits market themselves on Google Page One. You can gain thousands of followers and be far more competitive, and this is the good part, without paid advertising. Most business owners don't have the time or expertise to excel at marketing. Even fewer have the funds to hire a special employee. And you don't have to. There is a better option. Eric Colley, a consultant who uses leading-edge marketing strategies to increase your profitability at costs which are far more affordable than an advertising or marketing agency. You can be seen high up in Google's page one. You can dominate Google's local three-pack of businesses next to the search results map. You can increase foot and website traffic. Eric Colley can be reached at 208-999-7510. That's 208-999-7510. His website is besmallbusiness.com. BESMALLBUSINESS. And you can reach him by email at eric@besmallbusiness.com. And that's how you do it.
On that note, I'll be back tomorrow. Greg Penglis for Action Radio at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction and our bill site, www.writeyourlaws.com. That's WRITE, writeyourlaws.com. Talk to you tomorrow.
God bless.